testing. Mayor and council meeting, June 16th, 2025. Testing, 1, 2, 3.
7 o'clock. Call the meeting to order, please.
This regular meeting of the mayor and council of the Borough of Atlantic Highlands is called pursuant to provisions of the Open Public Meetings Law. Adequate notice has been provided by transmitting the resolution of annual meetings to the Asbury Park Press and the Two River Times, by posting it in Borough Hall on a bulletin board reserved for such announcements, and by filing it with the municipal clerk on January 2nd, 2025. This agenda is complete to the extent known, and formal action will be taken.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Colacerto.
Definitely here.
Mr. Crowder.
Here.
Mrs. Pusick.
Here.
Mr. Dougherty.
Here.
Ms. Ford.
Here.
Mr. Pujols.
Here.
Mayor Hohenlein.
Here. Before we stand for a moment of silent reflection and the Pledge of Allegiance, I just want to have a moment of silence when we get up for those who we were lost on Saturday. In this room, I know there's nobody that believes in acts of violence against people who are running for office, people who are holding office. I know that's what our neighbors in Atlantic Highlands feel. I feel it. But I want to recognize that we're living in a world right now where I can't be certain that, well, it's clear that not everybody shares that view. So as we stand and have a moment of silence, and we remember those who were lost, including their dog that their children had to agree to put down because the dog was not going to survive. Gilbert was his name. That these are real people who have real lives and real families, and so does each person in this room. So I'll ask us to please stand and take a moment of silence. And let's all put our hands on our hearts and do the Pledge of Allegiance to the greatest flag in the land. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay, switching gears. May I have a motion and a second to approve our previous meeting minutes from June 2nd, 2025?
So moved.
Crowley, seconds.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Colacerto.
Abstain.
Mr. Crowley.
Yes.
Mrs. Pusick.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty.
Yes.
Ms. Ford.
Yes.
Mr. Pujols.
Yes.
The minutes have passed.
Thank you. And my special volunteer of the month had a special opportunity to go to Boston, so they're on a train right now, but we will honor Eliza Childs at a future date. And I just told her mother I'm wearing my Trinity Hall clothes, which were the outfit I was going to wear for last time, so you'll see this dress again. Now, this is my great pleasure, my friend, my curmudgeon friend, I think, sometimes, someone who keeps us honest here in Atlantic Highlands, and someone who I told had less than 5 minutes, because I know it's going to be more than that. But my one of the most amazing artists, and when you go to the Arts Council, you walk in and you immediately are drawn to Mike Sherfman's work. He's won so many honors. During COVID, I even helped him do an online version of an art contest that they do every single year. So he's brought me in to his world. And his painting of the Stone Bridge, which is right across the street from my house, is iconic. And the casino is where I was growing up, so his work resonates with me in particular. And he's just all around good guy, lives with the best lady in town. Sorry anybody who's offended by that, but she is. And so I just want to bring Mike forward and give him the certificate and proclaim him Artist of the Month. He was chosen by the previous Artist of the Month, Morgan Spicer. So Mike, you're going to have to pick somebody good, because I don't know how he beat who we've had so far, but it's not a competition, even though you have lots of wins. So come on up. So I asked Mike to talk a little bit about his work, but I want to first, like, what's it like to work in Atlantic Highlands in this community? And you've lived here for how, I mean, forever.
Well, living and working and painting in Atlantic Highlands is probably the first thing that I did when I started painting almost 20 years ago. The first thing I did was I concentrated on the business people in town, including Marie Jackson. Marie Jackson is one of my favorite paintings. But all the paintings that I did of all the business people in Atlantic Highlands blossomed out into doing portraits, okay, which is my first love. Portraits deliver the legacy of the people that I paint. And when I paint them, I enter the paintings and shows, many, many shows. And when I've done entering them in all the shows, I do 50 shows a year, online and physical shows, let's say across the country and around the world. Anyway, when I finish showing those paintings, I give the portrait to the person. When I finish showing Marie, I gave her the portrait, the original portrait. And I've done that for many, many people. So that is the most dearest thing in my heart. That does lots of things for memories, for families, and down the road forever, okay? This brings back memories of people, from people, brings back memories. When I sell these and I show these in shows, I must get 30 people saying, I used to go there and bring my kids, because I did too, okay? So this is very meaningful to a lot of people, okay? More than probably any other painting I've done, okay? A quick rundown of who I am. I started drawing in the fourth grade, and I never looked back. After grammar school and after high school, I started working for an advertising agency, and I loved it. And I worked for art directors. These are the guys that make the pictures for the movies, for the commercials, and these are all drawn, okay? So I fell in love with that idea and went on to Art Center in Los Angeles, which is a premier art education college, okay? I graduated from Art Center and got immediately drafted into the Army and ended up going to Vietnam. Came back safely, I think, and went on to New York to get a job. I got a job in a week, okay? Then I spent 27 years in New York and probably 15 or 20 years outside of New York after I left New York doing art directing. Outside of New York was all online. Most of it was online. But I loved it so much that I tell people, I never worked a day in my life. In the 40 years that I've been doing art directing, never worked a day in my life. I loved it, okay? I was looking for, after leaving art directing, I was looking for something that I would love as much, okay? And I agonized over it, and one day my wife said, you've been drawing all your life. Just keep drawing and put color on it. Oh. So she introduced me through the library to Donald Voorhees, who's a local artist who has passed a number of years ago. And I was with him for 10 years, and he brought back all the lessons that I needed to know in order to paint. I'm a member of, a signature member of AWS, which may mean something to somebody in this room, but a signature member of American Watercolor Society, New Jersey Watercolor Society, Garden State Watercolor Society, and Atlantic Highlands Art Council, amongst many, okay? My first, very first portrait that I did was of Bob Adams, the mailman, okay? I don't know if any of you've seen it, but you can go online, my website, you can see him. And then that was followed up with my portrait of Marie. What else did I want to say? So, that's about it. And I also wanted to thank Morgan Spicer. Are you here today? No. Well, anyway, somebody told her that Ms. Spicer for nominating me. And I look forward to nominating the next artist who is much, much more talented than I am. Okay, and I'm not going to tell you who it is. next year. But I am just one of artists in the state, in the regional area, and in this town that is a talented artist. Okay, so I think of myself as just one of many. Okay, and when I go to New York City, and I get accepted into a show in New York City, I'm humbled because I'm surrounded by the world's best in watercolor. And I am humbled every time, okay? I go there. I see work that just blows me away, literally. So anyway, thank you very much for giving me your time. Yeah, so we can see.
Mayor, I just want to add one thing. I first met Mike in Maryland 17 years ago when I moved to Atlantic Highlands from Los Angeles, and they are two of my very favorite people in this town. And what he didn't mention is how much you poured yourself into the Film One Festival in the beginning of helping stand that up. So all of your work is so much appreciated for an event that is such a popular and loved event in town, and I will always be proud to consider myself a fellow alum of Art Center. And when I look at your work, and I say that's the work that comes out of that school, so we enjoy exchanging the secret handshake of Art Center. No, there is no secret handshake, but we're both orange dots, so congratulations, my friend. I'm very happy for you. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, and I promise you don't have to stay now. You're welcome to stay, but you don't have to. You could have a date night. We're going on to proclamations, Juneteenth.
Sure. whereas President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st, 1863, declaring the slaves in Confederate territory free, paving the way for the passing of the 13th Amendment, which formally abolished slavery in the United States of America. And whereas word about the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation was delayed some 2.5 years to June 19th, 1865, and reaching authorities and African Americans in the South and Southwestern United States. And whereas Emancipation Day observations are held on different days in different states in the South and Southwest and in other parts of the nation. And whereas the June 19th has a special meaning to African Americans and is called Juneteenth, combined the words June and 19th and has been celebrated by the African-American community for over 150 years. And whereas a Juneteenth flag will be flown outside Borough Hall from June 19th through the end of the month, and municipal offices will be closed on June 20th in observance. And now, therefore, Lori Hohenleitner, Mayor of the Borough of Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, do hereby declare June 19, 2025 as Juneteenth in the Borough of Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, and urge all citizens to become more aware of the significance of this celebration in African-American history and in the heritage of our nation and borough.
Thank you. Okay. Now we have unfinished business. Ordinance 9-2025 may have a motion and a second to introduce.
Crown moves.
To adopt.
I second.
Okay, we're now going to open this up to public comment. Mrs. Clark, would you mind reading the instructions for public comment?
The council encourages public participation and requests that all comments be addressed to the mayor. All comments should refer to the topics relevant to the powers and duties of the Atlantic Highlands Borough Government. Speakers are requested to maintain proper decorum at all times during the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for the benefit of council, if you're stating statistics, it would be great for us. And if you don't have them with you tonight, if you want to share those with us after the meeting, we would just love to know what your sources are. And for public comment, and I know we have people online, Jess.
We have 17 participants.
Great. So for those online, if you'd like to participate, please raise your virtual hand and Ms. McLean will recognize you and we'll bring you on to make your comment. For those here in the room, please indicate that you'd like to speak by raising your hand, coming forward to the gates right there and stating your name and address. Come on forward, sir. Second time's the best time.
Hopefully this one works now. John Bollinger, 96 Ocean Boulevard. I'm a Benny. I've only been here since 1993. I've paid $400,000, over $400,000 in taxes here in town, and that proves that I'm a Benny because only a Benny would say that. I've been in the cannabis business for 8 years now. I'm not even going to bring up the concept of whether there should or shouldn't be, because frankly, it's just been proven across the country that there is no great problem that occurs from having cannabis in a locality. Well, on the other hand, I would like to bring up and just perhaps point out that only taking two of the six categories might be limiting us a little bit on tax revenue and what the potential is. I've got a couple of specifics. The first one is research. It's not talked about a lot, but what's happening with cannabis is scientifically kind of amazing. All the different things that are being found out about the plant. This is a very heavy-duty pharmaceutical state, and if we were to open ourselves up to having some sort of research facility or some companies that want to do research, that might be helpful, again, on the tax basis, but also for the plant in general. And then the third one, we're in Atlantic Highlands. Not having, allowing micro-businesses to grow, to develop, and to be built here might be a little bit of a shortcoming, too. And I'll let you know, and I know that there are some people from the industry here today, that the profit margins and this great green rush that had occurred for many years isn't happening, but the smaller growers and the smaller companies are actually doing pretty well with it. So that's just what I'd like to say, and thank you.
Thank you. Any hands online? No one has their hands. Sir, in the back?
Good evening. My name is Richard Butik. I live at 113 Bay Avenue in town. And I would just like to, contrary to the previous gentleman, just express my strong opposition to cannabis in town. I'm father of three young children here in town. And I think, you know, one of the things that we like about the community in the sense of community and a good place of raising children, I find that to be incongruous with, you know, cannabis businesses. It's a very small town. You know, children walk around all the time, we walk our children back and forth to school. I don't think that, I just don't think it helps to kind of create the type of environment of what we're looking for young children in town. I have a lot of neighbors, I volunteer at the school as a class parent, so I get to know a lot of the kids. And I just, for me, you know, personally, and speaking for my wife who's at home with the kids right now, where she would also be here, you know, we just have a lot of concerns about, you know, introducing that into such a small town. There's not a lot of space. My understanding, I think, was that the ordinance was, you know, not within 500 feet of school or some other distance.
Do you want me to give you a copy of the ordinance?
If you have one handy, though, would be great. Otherwise, I can
get
it online. But regardless of the specific distance, there's really not a lot of space that you can be far away from the school. Thank you very much. So, just, you know, I understand that, you know, within the cannabis industry, there's, you know, interest in growth and profit margins and so forth, as there are in any business. Always been that kind of, you know, motivation. you know, in the cannabis industry, I believe, but I'm more interested in the growth of our children, the type of environment that they're going to have here in town, preserving the nature and character of town. So I just want to, you know, express very strongly my opposition to the ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone online?
No one has their hands raised.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Edelman. Sir, come forward.
Yeah, my name is Blaze Piazza. I live at 50 East Lincoln Avenue. I've lived in Atlanta Commons for 40 years. During that time, I raised three kids here. They went to St. Agnes, and then my son went to High Tech. My two daughters went to Huntington. I have been a special agent for U.S. Customs Service for 33 years, and in that time, I've worked smuggling, fraud, child pornography, narcotics, and I'm definitely opposed to any kind of marijuana sale or promotion in the town. It is a thing that I've always dealt with dealing with drug dealers, that they're constant liars, and they'd sell their own mother down the road if they could. I don't like drugs. I put my life on the line occasionally, not that often, but occasionally, in pursuit of stopping the drug proliferation in this country. And I am very opposed to any kind of marijuana growing, marijuana production, marijuana selling in the town. It is a blight, and if you're going to cite tax money as a reason to do this, then when do you stop? What's the next thing? Do you have a prostitution ring and vote that
sir, let's stay on the topic, please.
To make money, excuse me?
I said let's stay on the topic.
That is a topic. It's an illicit.
Well, you're talking about unregulated businesses. Right. So you're commenting on unregulated businesses.
Well,
we're talking about
marijuana is
it's not on schedule. You're right.
Yeah. All right. Well, regardless, making a few dollars in tax is not a sufficient reason to do this to our town, and I am definitely opposed to it.
Thank you. Who's next? Mr. Bums? I'm sorry, council, former council member Bums.
Right, Bums, 21st Avenue. I'm curious, what was the end result of the cannabis committee? Because it's my understanding, they haven't met in a year. What was their recommendation to council?
Excuse me? Glad to answer that. The recommendation was to go forward with the retail and the manufacturing. That was the recommendation.
And was there a recommendation to put it on First Avenue?
No.
So you guys think it's a good idea to stick something on First Avenue for retail sales?
It's prohibited on First Avenue.
Did you read the ordinance?
I thought I read the ordinance. I thought it was...
No.
Okay. Then my next question is, if you guys are moving forward with this, why make it a conditional use? Make it an allowable use, own it. Why stick it up to the planning board for them to make the decision? Why don't you guys own it?
That's not...
It's a conditional permitted use, as many other types of businesses are.
So somebody comes in and makes an application, they got to go to the planning board. The planning board has to kill it.
That's
non-elected board.
That's not the intent, that it's an appointed board by... That's not the intent. And in fact, do you want to weigh in here?
Just for a minute. The purpose of that, most towns make it a conditional use in order to make sure that the conditions imposed by the ordinance are satisfied. So it goes to the planning board, it is a conditionally permitted, and if the conditions are met, then it's a permitted use.
So, yeah, exactly. Who's overseeing? Who would be overseeing that?
A committee will be formed. But again, the ordinance would be helpful if you'd read it. Yes?
Hi. I did read the ordinance. I'm glad you handed them out. Due diligence is to read the ordinance before you come, right?
Should be.
So my name is Deborah Keller. I live at Simpson Avenue for the last 16 years. 30-year educator. I'm not going to go into statistics. At the last meeting, two meetings ago, I spoke about how I feel about the use of marijuana / cannabis as a gateway drug. I've seen students over many, many years impacted by this. I'm going to look a little closer at the ordinance. So, class two is a manufacturer, class five is a retailer, from what I read. It says class five licenses shall not be located within 500 feet from a K-12 school on the same side or opposite side of the street. So what about the class two manufacturers?
It's the same.
It doesn't say that in the ordinance.
That would be because they're not, manufacturing use wouldn't be permitted anywhere near a school. The industrial areas of the town are not near a school.
So because it's outlying HB zones, it doesn't fall in there, is that?
That's correct.
Okay, acceptable. Okay. So can we talk about delivery? Because it's pretty extensive. Third-party technology platform.
We don't allow delivery in our ordinance.
So that's, is that clear?
Yeah.
That's great.
Although we can't prevent delivery from other towns that are delivering to Atlantic Highlands.
So security guard, it says that one security guard will be stationed there. Is that inside the business, outside the business? It's not clear in the ordinance.
Do you want to answer that? What page are you on? I'm sorry. I think the assumption in writing the ordinance, and then I'm not going to be able to state the language.
It says all licensed cannabis establishments shall have at least one formally licensed security guard stationed at each facility during operation.
So my expectation would be inside.
Should that not be memorialized?
Do you think it's much?
I think that the fact that there's security, then when it gets before the planning board, they would have to be satisfied that there was adequate security. There could be alarms on the outside of the building. There's going to be no signage. I mean, the state regulates it pretty significantly, so there's a lot of things they can't do already. And then the question about security, whether security is adequate, is something the board will look at when they get an application before them.
Adequate is very subjective. And secondly, tracked by Eatontown, and there's two or three armed guards outside the facility. So I'd like to know what that presence is going to look like in Atlantic Highlands. I don't know that.
Never seen that.
I've never seen it either. I don't think I've seen it anywhere else.
I'll put it in my phone. I'll be happy to send it to you.
I've never seen it, and I've driven by that.
Okay, so we can agree to disagree. But so it's not going to be stipulated as to what.
At a minimum, there has to be security at the entrance. And usually, I'm told that they're double entrances. There's people from the industry here that could probably comment next and answer some of these questions on how it functionally works in an existing facility. But because of the age restrictions, there has to be a checkpoint at entry. So.
Right. So if there's.
I'm not designing.
Outside,
sure.
If there's a line outside, if there's a dispute outside, if there's a fight outside, are we going to call Atlantic Highlands police officers? Are we going to have that one armed? It doesn't say armed, it says security. Come outside. I don't think that we should be referring to the experts in the room. This is our borough. This is our ordinance. You are our elected officials. And I do not want to hear, if somebody wants to put a Burger King, I don't want a guy that has 10 Burger Kings coming in here and saying what it's like.
We
need to be the experts.
The police chief has a designee on the committee that is examining licenses, so these are questions that would be asked then. And there's a representative from the police department on that group.
So why is this governing body not the all-knowing other? We supposedly have a committee. We have one or two members, I think, Councilwoman Cusack, Councilwoman Forbes, Councilperson. Well, we have people that were on that committee. Why is that true, what Brian Baum said? The committee hasn't met in a year?
Yes, because that's when they made the recommendation.
So for 1 year, we have not revisited this?
We have been working on the ordinance with their recommendations. Nobody's rushing anything. People are trying to be thoughtful. We're doing our investigations, and we're answering questions like yours.
It feels quite rushed.
Well, how many years have you been protesting against this? Because that doesn't feel rushed to me. It feels like it's been a really long time.
I don't know. I guess it's been enough. The last thing I'd like to bring up is, I'm not going to cite statistics because I don't have the evidence with me. However, when the brewery opened, I remember when I was on the school board and from other people in the neighborhood, during certain times of the day, there would be a very strong aroma. I smelled it myself right outside the schoolyard walking my dogs, that there is a very, very strong odor coming from a brewery, right? Unfortunately, it's across from the school. However, If you look at 211-11.4 of other licensing requirements, odor control, all cannabis operations shall be required to submit an odor mitigation plan. It goes on to say with sufficient odor absorbing ventilation. So that to me, again, mitigation and sufficient is very subjective. So basically, if you, and you can research this, I can also send some articles. So the smell that comes from this is a volatile organic compound. So I would like to know how the municipality will control or regulate that production. It's known as skunky smell, pungent smell, sewer-like smell, gassy smell. So
this would be prohibited.
Down the street and smelling that.
This would be prohibited.
What manufacturing will be prohibited?
No, just any smell outside the facility.
So what happens if there is a smell?
They get cited and closed down. They will get cited for violating the ordinance.
They'll get cited and closed down, is that what you said?
If they violate the ordinance, they'll be cited and they'll either mitigate the solve the problem or they'll be closed.
Just because we're in this section under manufacture, we would not approve any volatile substances. We're talking like Willy Wonka versus something else. Like we're talking about just adding tincture to.
Mayor, it's part of the manufacturing. Anything you read on it.
And we are not going to allow any volatile substances.
Why do we need manufacturing?
No one is saying we need anything. We're having a discussion with the public tonight to see what is best for Atlantic Highlands, what is would benefit potentially Atlantic Highlands, and it would have been fiscally irresponsible for us to not actually do the research on this as your elected representatives.
So can we add to the ordinance if in fact that this odor does cause problems and people like the gentleman that spoke earlier with three children and myself that I have asthma, like I don't want to smell that stuff. I don't.
None of us do.
It's listed in section 211-11.6, revocation of license. It's the second to last page.
And that is going to be enforced by code enforcement and Atlantic Council, please comment.
It says there in section B that the provisions of this ordinance shall be enforced by the police department or the code enforcement officer or his or her designee.
But councilperson, it does not say if the odor is not remedied.
It says any license issued under this chapter may be suspended or revoked for a violation of any of the provisions of this chapter or any provision of the applicable statute or any of the rules or regulations of the state of New Jersey.
Where are you saying that's a violation to have the volatile organic compounds?
This covers everything within.
Yeah, this is an omnibus provision that covers the rest of the ordinance.
This is an omnibus provision that covers the rest of the ordinance. If there's a violation from anything from page one on that permits a closure, that allows either the chief of police or the code enforcement to close the business.
It doesn't say that. It says odor complaints will be directed to New Jersey DEP environmental hotline. We know how long they take, right?
If there's not
a further investigation and compliance with their Air Pollution Control Act. They're talking about the state. They're not talking about the municipality.
If the odor is not mitigated, it permits the police and or the code enforcement to close the business. It's pretty simple.
It's subjective. It's not simple.
Every standard is subjective, whether it's beyond a reasonable doubt, preponderance of the evidence, so on and so forth. There's no hard and fast standard in the law that is not subjective. So unless it's yes or no, it's going to be subjective.
But you just actually...
Ms. Apollo, do you have anything else to say?
I just want to say one more thing. If you say preponderance of the evidence or beyond a reasonable doubt, that's a standard. There's no
It's standard. A subjective standard. Sufficient is a standard.
I disagree. Thank you.
That's why he passed the bar.
I don't think that's necessary.
Yep. I'm Chuck Rutledge, 24 Highland Place. And I kept up to date with this, and I found out about this meeting today. And my question and concern is related to the manufacturing. I got a little bit. I just had surgery on my ears, so I'm having trouble hearing.
Sorry.
But regardless of that, I come from Reddington Township, where they had put in a manufacturing facility that became a giant controversy, right? And as I read through the ordinance quickly, they talked about mitigation, which, you know, suggests not necessarily elimination, but, you know, what can we do to mitigate? And that was exactly the situation they had there.
Can I just ask a question? I just want to ask a question. It was a cultivation. Is it a cultivation facility or a manufactured facility? Because those are two very different things.
I can't tell you. Other than I know they did manufacturing. There's a new cultivation there too. I don't know.
Okay, one of us will look it up just because that. Yes. We'll look it up to be clear.
But what ended up happening, it's a pretty substantial facility, and it's far back off the road, but you could drive down Route 22 and smell the facility, and that created a big controversy, and they forced them to put in all kinds of ventilation, and you could still smell. And the VFW across the street, and they were up in arms, and then they forced them to put in a barrier of vegetation. Right, and my wife was just by there yesterday, and says you can still smell it. So you know, once it's there, right, and you can write the ordinance, but once it's there, you've got a problem. So this is something that I don't know all the details, but before it goes in, you're going to want to make sure that it doesn't smell, because when the wind blows, it can go all through town.
So, Ms. Council President Dougherty has looked.
It's going to have to speak up.
Council President Dougherty has looked up this facility, and he has an answer for you, and it is not a type of facility that we would allow under any of these licenses.
It's a cultivation facility. It's a large grow house, okay, as opposed to the small manufacturing businesses that are
large.
Yes.
So I imagine they do a lot of things.
So when you have tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of plants growing in a facility, you're going to have much more concentration of odor than you would in the manufacturing type businesses that we're considering.
That I don't know, yeah. But I do know.
But that answers that question.
Processing it, right?
It would not be allowed here. It would not be allowed here.
But I also, the section D that's been read before says, all buildings shall be equipped with an air treatment system with sufficient odor control.
I read that. Yeah.
Okay. I have to make sure that no odor generated inside the facility is detectable by a person of reasonable sensitivity at the property line.
I read that, right? So, well, my point was, once it's there, right? Then you're in a battle. Unless you're going to come in and tell me you're going to shove that.
We are not allowing that type of license.
That's my concern and question.
And so I think we've answered it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. You guys should do a comedy show.
So I went shopping today.
Nate, please state your name and address.
Nicholas Coles, 86 East Mount Avenue.
And please make sure you're addressing your comments to the dais.
Yes. I went shopping today, and it might shock some people in this room that THC products are indeed already available in Atlantic Highlands. In the form of Delta 8 THC, which is different than Delta 9 THC, which is what we're talking about for these dispensaries. This is unregulated, and due to a loophole in the Farm Bill, these products are sold can be sold in liquor stores. And this isn't CBD. This is THC, and this will get you. Buzz, so this will get you high the same way as cannabis from dispensary does. The problem is this is unregulated and untaxed in the borough. So I don't really want to talk about kind of the cultural issues or surrounding cannabis. I just have like a couple yes or no questions that I think would maybe clear things up for the community. So these Delta 8 THC products. Do we receive any tax money in the borough from those sales?
No.
All right, so these are for sale at all three liquor stores. If you approve a dispensary, right, the sale of cannabis will get 2% of that, right, the sales tax for the borough, correct? So the businesses that these are sold at, do they require ID? To be presented both when you enter the establishment and at point of sale?
That I don't know because
I
don't.
The answer to that is no.
Okay.
So you can walk into a liquor store. I didn't get ID'd at all today. Obviously, I don't look like I'm underage. But, you know, someone could walk in and peruse the aisles and look at these products and not have to prove that they're of age. Now, the state requires for a cannabis dispensary that people coming in to buy product present their ID both when they enter and at the point of sale. So also, these are sold at these liquor stores. Is there anything in Atlantic Highlands preventing them from plastering advertising?
No.
No. So much like I walk by this like six pack of Sun Cruisers for $20.99, that could be six pack of THC beverages for the same, right? We could. There's nothing on the books to prevent that from happening. So my point is, there are more guardrails in place to prevent the sales of THC products at a dispensary that's state licensed than these products from a liquor store. And also, the state regulates what packaging can be. And I guarantee you they would never have anything called orange soda. Which, you know, we're very concerned about our kids, but now we have this product that is readily available in Atlantic Highlands. So that brings me to the second thing is I want to talk about another intoxicant that is for sale and has been for sale, and that's alcohol. So we've already established that liquor stores, right, they don't require ID upon entrance or ID at point of sale unless they determine patrons to be under a certain age. And that's the other. There's no guardrail the same way for the purchase of alcohol that there is for this cannabis dispensaries. Now, do we have anything, any ordinance or anything on the books preventing these liquor stores from advertising alcohol? We don't, right? So you can walk up to these stores. It's literally like the brick and mortar version of a pop-up ad, right? Neon signs, deals, right? And in terms of like alcohol or parts with spirits, you know, hard beverages. So kids are exposed to that, right? And at these liquor stores, but there are things in place that prevent these cannabis dispensaries from having that. So for some reason, we've been able to live for a long time with that, but we have a cannabis dispensary that can literally only say the name of the business and the dispensary, and that seems to be controversial, which I don't understand. And so I went to all the liquor stores in town today, and I also looked up all the pictures of the dispensaries in Red Hook. And I don't know about you, but aesthetically, I would probably, Red Bank. I don't know about you, but I would rather live next to any of the dispensaries of Red Bank than any of the liquor stores we have in town in terms of aesthetics. Now, I don't want to take anything away from the liquor stores in town. I patronize all three of them. They all have a strong suit. Shout out to Bill at Scenic. But, you know, I think this kind of madness surrounding dispensaries is unfounded given what's already for sale in Atlantic Highlands. And furthermore, alcohol use costs the borough money. I don't know if you read the police blotter like me, but, you know, it's mostly DUIs. In addition to domestics, which I'm sure alcohol plays a part in. So alcohol sales, you know, cost the borough money in policing overconsumption, but we receive nothing back from those sales. We don't get 2% of alcohol sales. So I applaud Mayor and Council for pushing this through and doing the research. And I really think that, you know, it's good. It'll be good for Atlantic Highlands to have a well-regulated business that gives tax money back to Atlantic Highlands.
Thank you. Please. We're all going to be respectful.
I do have someone on.
Okay, can you bring them over?
Yes. Okay. He's a panelist now. I think that he just needs to speak.
Can you tell me his name?
His name is Enid Wallach.
Enid?
Oh, Enid.
So,
yeah.
Ms. Wallach, can you, or whoever is on the phone right now that has been promoted as a panelist, can you please state your name and address for the record?
Sure. 14 Bayside Drive, Michael Wallach.
Please proceed.
We moved to the Atlantic Highlands 10 years ago. And I think the thing that attracted us most to the Atlantic Highlands, it was sort of Mayberry-esque. Okay, we have three grown children, two grandchildren, have lived in many different places, and we moved here because of the quaintness of the town. And I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I totally disagree with the gentleman who spoke before, that just because we have alcohol stores in the town means it's correct that we should have a cannabis store in the town. I think when you walk through towns that smell like marijuana all the time, and you have small children and groups of families walking down the street, I don't think that is something that we desire to have in this town. I think, what is the motivation? That is really what's bothering here. If it's only dollars, then the town could attract other businesses to town. I don't think just because other towns have cannabis stores, Red Bank or whatever, we're not lemmings, right? I think the Atlantic Highlands should strive to be something better than the other towns. And I think having a marijuana store or cannabis store, whatever you want to call it in town, only brings down the town. I think if it's dollars that's motivating, and you know, you spoke about, well, what are the benefits and what are the consequences of bringing this in town? I'd just like somebody to tell me one benefit besides dollars that it brings to the town.
Often cannabis businesses work with municipalities on giving back to the town itself. So in other municipalities...
Giving back what? You're talking about giving back what? We're talking about dollars.
I'm talking about building playgrounds. I'm talking about sponsoring events. I'm talking about being good partners in the community and cleaning up parts of town that need extra maintenance.
Yeah, anybody.
Sir, you asked me for examples. Sir, you asked me for examples. I gave you examples. I answered your question. And I just want to remind you that we cannot, cannabis, people smoking or vaping or doing any of these things, including smoking cigarettes in Atlantic Highlands, it's enforceable. You can't do it. You cannot smoke or do any of this publicly. So as much as we, Mr. Wallach, I'm going to finish. So you're...
I just have one other question, and I'm not educated on that one or not. Does something like this go to vote in the Atlantic Highlands, or is this by...
It already did. More than 73% of your neighbors voted in favor of adult-use cannabis.
Okay. I stand corrected. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, can I just point out, so I have the statistics in front of me, so just when Mayor Hohenleitner just mentioned the referendum, in November 2020, general election, state question one, which legalized adult use cannabis in New Jersey, and part two, set up retail marketing and taxation, was approved with 72.5% of the vote in Atlantic Highlands. It was an extremely high turnout election, don't have to remind anyone of that. 1,682 votes were cast for President Biden. 1,243 votes were cast for Donald Trump. 2,154 votes were cast in favor of ballot question one. So the question of why, voters overwhelmingly approved this. Overwhelmingly.
I'm going to have everybody go, and then I'll definitely, if people want to make another comment, I will call on you. Sir?
Hi, John Marchetti. I'm not a Atlantic Highlands resident.
But we welcome you.
Thank you.
Can you give us your address, though?
Yes. 8 Forest Gardens, Woolbridge. So I am a cannabis dispensary owner. We own one in Madawan and one in Englishtown, Manalapan. Englishtown is very similar to this borough township. It's small. Englishtown is less than a square mile.
They have four licenses that are currently active. They gave out, they are issuing a fifth. Competition will take care of that itself, so don't be worried about that. I totally understand all the residents' concerns because we've been through this in Red Bank, we've been through this in Mattawa, and we went through this in English Town. It's new, and people don't like change, and it's upsetting. We are already delivering to Atlantic Islands, and we do delivery, so we are already in your town, so to speak. Delivery has been very good for us because any time that I opted out, they are getting delivery, so we are here. We would like a bigger presence here as a class 5 dispensary. We are not looking to do class 2 manufacturing, anything like that. But as the other gentleman said, as far as the liquor stores, we are so regulated that if you wouldn't even believe the stuff that the government can do for us. So they can check into our cameras at any time in the store. They have complete access. They can give us violations by checking those cameras. They can check our POS at any time. They know where every single seed and strand is. It's called seed to sale. As soon as you plant, they get the QR code and tell throughout all classes. Class 6 is coming, which is going to be the lounges, which some people will allow, some people won't. But they know everything. So I completely understand the residents and their concerns, and I'd love to talk to anybody if you want to. I'm in it, so I understand. But the state CRC takes care of 90% of the concerns. You're not going to smell anything from the dispensaries. Everything is triple packaged. You have to be in a safe room, which is inside the dispensary, which is inside the waiting room. There's plenty of barriers. The security issue with the armed guards and all that. So when we first opened, we had armed guards, and we realized quickly we didn't need them. We just have in-store security. I would probably say 65 to 70% of our clientele is medicinal use, veterans, and our older clientele. When I say older, I'm saying my age, 46, and older. People think it's kids. People think it's going to be 21-year-olds. It's not. That's what the liquor stores really are. We have a lot of veterans, and we have a lot of people who use it for medicinal use. So the reefer madness picture is still held, unfortunately. People outside, drug addicts outside with needles in their arms, and we went through all that. And we actually became a very, English Town was completely against it. The residents were just same complaints we hear here tonight. And we ended up building a dog park for them. We ended up cleaning up one of the parks in town for them. We do barbecues on the holidays. We just did one for Memorial Day. We became a member of the community. And we know we're a vice business. So we have to try even harder because people are already against us. We're not getting a fair shot. We have to win over a lot of the residents. And we've done that. Not everybody. Some people are just never going to like our business, and that's okay. Some people aren't going to like liquor stores, and some people won't like bars and restaurants. It is what it is. But just as an owner coming to you guys, to the mayor and the council, we hope that we can get one of the licenses when they're presented. We have, I'd love to sit with anybody and residents as well and just go over any questions or concerns, how we can work together, how we can make the community better. We've been in it for about a year, and this year we're projected, the four cannabis dispensaries in English Town, to exceed about 10% of their annual budget in tax money. So there's real numbers for you. So I know everybody's like, well, it can't just be about the money. It is about the money, let's just be honest. It is about the money, but it's also about us being a good member of the community. The liquor stores are already here. They do more damage in my eyes than anything else. Somebody's using medicinal alcohol. This isn't the 1920s. Coca-Cola is not, you know what I mean? So this is a real medicinal use. We do have the veterans, and we do have the medicinal card. We do discounts for first responders. We do discounts for locals. We're very involved in the community in all the stores. So I just want to come up here and give you, introduce you to who I am. We will be applying for one if it is approved. And I would love to sit with any council member, the mayor, any resident that has questions, and just have an open dialogue and try to educate each other on what are your concerns. If we do get into town, how can we, address those concerns so you feel better? Because this is your community. We're a guest. We're coming into your community. Hopefully you'll build your community better. How can we help? That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Anyone online, Jess?
No one at this time.
No. Anybody else here? Okay, I've got three hands. Okay, I'm gonna go with Mr. Garbato first. Mr. Piazza, yeah, thank you.
Paul Barbato, 22 Laurie Road, aka Wiley Road. I moved here to make it quick, very quick, and please don't talk over me. Okay? I'm just gonna make it quick. I came here 25 years ago, and again, just to state, we came here because we thought it would be better. Okay, just where we were living, it got bad. Okay, I'm not going to say where it was, but it got bad. So we came here, and now it seems like we should just maybe go back where it was. But I'm concerned about the tax dollar. Everybody's talking that we're going to get money out of this. I worked for the state of New York for 35 years, and all the budgets and everything, they were never on time. The same thing here. The money that goes to Trenton never comes back. That's one thing. Just look at the Garden State Parkway. They said, once it's paid off, no tolls. Baloney. The same thing with the Verrazano Bridge in New York. Once the bridge is paid, no tolls. It's $25. If you don't have an easy pass, it's like $25 to go over the damn bridge now. Okay, so we're not going to get any money back. If that's what you think you're going to get, the tax dollar back, we're not getting it back. So forget it. It's lost. The other thing is, number two is medicinal purposes. Okay, I was in the field with working in for the state, and all the medical stuff, you can get a prescription. You can have it delivered right to your house. Why does it have to be inconvenience? If you have that medicine, you need to smoke it and to feel better, why do you need to go to the store when you can just have it delivered, tell your doc, make the prescription, you don't even have to go to the store. The ID, that's what I'm concerned about, the children. The ID to get in there, like one of the gentlemen said, you can just walk in. What is the protocol with children or someone who's 18 years old? Can they just walk in? Do they have to show an ID to get in there?
Yes, of course.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to go on a field trip.
I am. Okay? So you won't hear from me for about 2 months. All right? So the other thing is...
No, I meant to a dispensary. We talked about you going to visit one.
No, I never talked about the thing.
You did.
And I was going to go visit a dispensary?
Yes. I remember that.
I would like the audience to know, I usually come here on a regular basis. I have no reason to go to a dispensary.
Okay.
I don't have no reason. And the other thing, talking about drugs, look at cable TV, regular TV. In two days, that we're so drug-oriented here, between Flonase, all the stuff, Liberfy, you can't even pronounce it. Stuff. There's so many drugs out there, and I'm sure you're all on drugs with something. And we don't need it. We just make it plain and simple. There's plenty of towns here. You don't need it. If you couldn't get it delivered, I would say to the gentleman, yes, okay, we need it because we don't have a delivery of it. Amazon will deliver it, and they'll put it with a drone.
Thank you, Mr. Barbato. Just wanted to mention that in the ordinance, the tax percentage is based on the receipts for each sale and will be paid directly to the municipality in the manner prescribed by the borough. So
yeah, sure.
That's what's happening in other towns. I don't know. The mayor of Fort Lee seems pretty darn happy.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Krause, come forward.
James Krause, 77 Bayside Drive. Full disclosure, I was a member of the Cannabis Committee. Is a member of the Cannabis Committee because we may end up having another meeting. I'll also disclose that I might be one of the only people in the room other than the people on the dais who actually read the entire statute, which I think was over 200 pages, and the regulations, which were somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 pages. But during the pandemic, there was something else to do.
All right, friends.
My remarks are going to be a little bouncing all over the place because I didn't really prepare anything. I just decided I'd come here and listen to what people said and then try to have reactions to it. The cannabis committee, based on the emails that I just looked at, started in 2022. One of the original members was Councilman Steve Balakia, who had extensive experience in the cannabis business, member of a different political party than any of you folks up there. One of the first things we decided was no grow facilities because they smell. And Steve had done, had spent a lot of time in California, and that's why there's no grow facilities. And what the gentleman said about what's happening in Reddington, I believe it's got to be a terrible problem. That's why we should never have that here. One of the things that we agreed on quickly was manufacturing. Most manufacturing facilities can be done in a room about this size with very intensive odor control, as regulated in the state by the state. So to me, outlawing manufacturing in Atlantic Highlands is passing up an opportunity to get some tax revenue with virtually almost nobody in the town will even know that they're manufacturing gummies and whatever else in a building in Atlantic Highlands in the industrial zone. It's just mind-boggling that there would be any objection to that. As far as the fact that we have not had a meeting in roughly a year, and that's because we've been going back and forth with draft ordinances. And it's been, since there's a number of people involved, and they've been bouncing all over the place, and it took a while to try to get this as good as we could possibly make it. And I think that's a credit to the Borough Council that they've chosen to do it that way rather than rush into something. I want to echo the fact that what the mayor said about smoking cannabis in public is prohibited by state ordinance. So, worrying about people smoking on the street, hopefully our police will inform them that they should stop, and if they don't stop, they'll be arrested. I don't see people drinking liquor out of paper bags all over First Avenue. So I don't anticipate it'll be like Manhattan for several years. When I was still working, going to New York and getting at 8 o'clock in the morning and walk to the office in Penn Station and smell cannabis. And I just can't see that happening. In this town. We're not New York. We're a small suburban community. Alcohol, there's some discussion about alcohol. Alcohol is a gateway drug. A lot of people talk about marijuana being a gateway drug. In suburban areas, it's really alcohol. People wear their parents' liquor cabinets, and anybody who's going to be inclined to go into heavier drugs starts on alcohol. So I don't see an argument to say no marijuana because it's a gateway drug. Having read the regulations and then the statute, what the mayor said about tax collection is absolutely true. The dispensaries and manufacturing operations have to report their revenues to the chief financial officer of the borough, along with a check for the tax. And towns like we even had I don't remember whether it's people from Freehold, from dispensaries from Freehold or Eatontown, present in this room, who actually said that they were drawing checks for six-figure numbers on a quarterly basis. I don't know if we'll hit that. So they were people who were signing the checks to the borough. So nothing goes through Trenton. It comes right here. And then finally, I want to agree with one thing that one gentleman said. Drug dealers are awful. But this what's happening in New Jersey is to put drug dealers out of business. Think back when they Prohibition came in and the mafia was running the liquor. And you know, similar situation. Once Prohibition ended, then mafia was out of business in the liquor world, and liquor stores came back in. So I think he was right. Drug dealers are bad, and dispensaries throughout New Jersey can help put drug dealers out of business, marijuana business.
Thank you. I have someone online.
Sabrina has her hand raised.
Okay. When you've come over and become a panelist, please state your name and address for the record.
Hello, Sabrina Ponterero. I don't live in the township, but my address is 225 Lexington Boulevard in Clark, New Jersey.
Go ahead.
So I'm actually the owner of a dispensary also, and I just wanted to echo what was just said about the 2% social excise tax fee. So I've actually written those checks in two different municipalities and driven them directly to the township. And to be honest with you, you know, when you're writing checks for that amount as a small business owner, you want to hand deliver that. So I know that's kind of like the pressing thing tonight is the tax revenue that it's going to drive for the township. But I just wanted to make sure that was said so it can mitigate some of the concerns.
Thank you. Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet? Yes, sir. Please come forward.
Good evening, everybody. Jay Russell, 58 Main Street. Madam, I'm not a resident of this town. I am a cannabis dispensary owner, as such as my counterpart that was here. I'm joined here by my attorney, Mr. Bo Buck. I just wanted to highlight some things that I've heard. I was sitting in the crowd, and I was chuckling, and just not out of disrespect for anyone. But I'm a licensed nursing home administrator by trade. I'm also a former CEO of New York City Hospital, that I will not mention. But I'm very used to regulated industries, and cannabis is one of them. Cannabis is a very, very highly regulated industry. I do not know if everyone in this room understands how regulated we are, but I'm just going to go through some talking points, and then hopefully I can highlight some of those things. So first and foremost, I did hear comments about
Sir, excuse me one second. Hey, Chief, can you? Sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. Okay, so I'm a father of three, and I definitely hear concerns about how cannabis is perceived in the community. Having a cannabis dispensary, we actually just opened up our doors on April 18th. So we've been operating for short of 2 months now. And some of the things that we can see and some of the things that I want to highlight is that there are very, very strict guidelines on how cannabis is marketed to children. There was a gentleman here that made a great demonstration of what's allowed in liquor stores and how it's completely opposite in the cannabis industry. State regulates packaging, and they also regulate how we can market the cannabis. So if anyone goes online, if you take a look at the public record, you can go to our website, thecannabar.com, and you can see how our store is portrayed and how it fits the bill of what state and licensures individuals would be looking for. There was another comment that was made against, there was a gentleman that was here that worked in law enforcement, and there was another comment in regard to security. So, some of our staff, or 60% of our staff, come from the local community. So the individuals that work for us, in terms of the illicit market and how drug dealers are terrible. So, sorry, I'm just going to take my notes. So right now, the illicit market, we believe, is actually what harms communities. The illicit market, we have drug dealers or individuals who are getting their cannabis illegally on the streets, or whether they're getting it delivered They're getting it by means of ways which we're not regulating. Us actually having a method, a means, a way to actually regulate the cannabis industry or store or the products that are actually being sold in the community goes a long way by actually having a retail dispensary that is structured and that also has regulations that are as scrutinous as cannabis. There were comments that were made about the aroma. Again, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. The aroma, cannabis comes through triple package, it's vacuum sealed, everyone knows it. There are no smells that happen in the community. It's actually part of the state SOP to have mitigating effects of aroma in the cannabis during your licensure process. In addition to that, there was a comment made on the Trenton 2% tax. The gentleman made a comment on Trenton. Again, I'm not saying anything that no one here doesn't know. But we've been open for, I want to say, 7 weeks. And in those 7 weeks, we generated well over $1 million in sales. And 2% of that will be going to our local municipality. We're actually going to be writing a check to them this week. So that just goes to show I've celebrated the benefits that can come by having a cannabis dispensary in town. ID verification. So ID verification, when you come to the store, ID is checked upon entry and at the POS as well. Again, I'm not saying anything that no one knows, but there are many chances to stop individuals who are under the age of 21 from consuming or from purchasing cannabis. And in addition to that, delivery. So delivery is currently happening in Atlantic Highlands. So delivery is currently happening in Atlantic Highlands. There's a gentleman here, we're actually the only licensed dispensary in Mattawan. There's a gentleman here from Mattawan as well, and they deliver to Atlantic Highlands. Atlantic Highlands is not receiving any of those funds. And Englishtown, where this gentleman is actually receiving the funds. If Atlantic Highlands residents are the ones that are consuming it, it makes a lot of sense for Atlantic Highlands to benefit from their residents actually consuming the cannabis. Most of the individuals that we see are vets, they are teachers, they are construction workers, they are individuals who are 40 plus. We're not seeing a riffraff. The stores, the individuals that you choose to be in your community, where the cannabis, we hope to have a license, we will be applying for the license in this community. But the individual that you choose to have a presence in the community will be those individuals that are business savvy and that understand the needs of the town and will be adding value to the town. Some of the things that we have done in terms of in Mattawan, where we're planting flowers and working with local municipality to have community events are just an example of what we're looking to do in Atlantic Highlands. And there is a lot of noise about the pros and cons. Again, when we started this business, we thought that we were going to have young 21-year-olds, young 25-year-olds outside the store smoking cannabis and making a big ruckus. It's completely different. We came in with a security plan for individuals who are worried about security. So your state or your license actually gets reviewed by the police chief based on the ordinance. So the police chief reviews your security plans, can make recommendations, and we are operating, or excuse me, we are seen by the state at all times of day. So from the time that we open the store to the time that we close the store, the state has full access to our security systems, POS, 24-hour security surveillance. So there are many ways in which there are checks and balances for cannabis to stay out of the wrong individual's hands. And on top of that, there are many ways in which we can help make cannabis have a better life in the community presence. At our store, and what we hope to bring to this community, is a sophisticated feel, a different connotation and understanding of cannabis, how it can benefit the community, the benefits that there are in the community, building local parks, communicating and funding local events. It's bigger than just cannabis, and I just want to make sure I highlight that.
Thank you.
Bo Huck, 212, she's Point Pleasant, New Jersey. I'm the attorney for Cannabar. I've been involved with this issue for as long as we've been talking about it here in New Jersey. I used to work in politics. And it's been interesting to see how it's evolved. I think we can all agree that Congress is somewhat useless. It's been left to the states to really figure out how to do this. New Jersey, with our wonderful tradition of home rule, we've given it to you guys because, hey, it's more fun to watch all the towns try to figure it out. It's the only issue I see at hemp and marijuana where it's a bipartisan issue, it's nonpartisan, I should say, where you have people from different demographics coming out, and you have everybody showing up to a town meeting for maybe their first time. It's really kind of entertaining in that sense. The industry has evolved in
rapid fashion, and you've seen different things happen in different states. New Jersey's been pretty thoughtful in what it does and does not permit. Colorado, we refer to how they sell marijuana, it's almost a deli style. You can get it in jars, it's stinky in a retail store. As Jay mentioned, it's triple packaged. If you're an environmentalist, you might cringe when you see how much waste as far as plastic comes out of this. New Jersey also been pretty thoughtful as far as how our records are kept on, who comes into the store. If you want to purchase a firearm, those records do not get shared outside of the state of New Jersey. The store from the outside, you can barely tell exactly what it is when you actually see it. The aesthetics of these things are controlled immaculately by the town as to what can what it can be viewed as. The windows are often glazed. You can barely even tell that it's a dispensary other than usually the giant words outside in front of it. You usually can't have a giant marijuana leaf or anything like that out in front of it. Although at the federal level, you're allowed to have a hemp leaf, which makes things a little bit more complicated for everybody else. These licenses are subject to annual review by the CRC. And if you are a bad operator where a town does not like you and you are misbehaving, regularly violating, it's very similar to a liquor license that also has annual review in the state. You do not pass go, you do not come back. The fine schedule is pretty steep and it elevates pretty quickly. And what we've seen from the regulator here in Trenton is they like to issue fines and they don't like to stick to the schedule. They actually bring the hammer down pretty fast. Not as fast as the ABC, but still pretty fast. Again, with odor mitigation, you're not going to really be able to address that because in a store you will be, but outside you already have people coming to town and smoking probably all over the place just with cigarettes. Your local law enforcement have the right to issue fines just with that. This is all subject to the same laws, the Clean Air Act here in New Jersey. Wherever you can smoke a cigarette, you're allowed to smoke weed, but not vice versa. So keep that in the back of your head. Fastest demographic of consumers, growing demographic of consumers, senior citizens. And among trends, they don't drink Chardonnay anymore, they go get edibles. And as far as, she was a special ed teacher, by the way, for 20 years, and she's very proud that I'm doing this now. You know, as far as what the business is obligated to do with the town, as part of the submission to the state, as far as the submission to the town, usually gets a copy of their state submissions. Community Impact Plan is part of that. It's literally required that we be your partner to participate here. And we're happy to work with you in any which way and try to figure out what's the best thing for the town. I'm trying to think. Oh, as far as consumer education, going back to senior citizens, I find that when you have a dispensary in your town, a place where people can actually come and get educated on the product. It is an invaluable local resource. It's not uncommon now to have senior nursing facilities in certain towns ask for a dispensary to come in and have a conversation with their seniors because they're trying to figure it out themselves. A few months back, the Attorney General's office had a great press release, I think it was 23,000 pounds of illicit cannabis coming into New Brunswick. No tax revenue to the state, completely unregulated. This is seed to sale tracking again. It is wild as the amount of security that goes on in the space. Dispensaries are basically banks. It is incredible. They talk about where they should put mesh in the drywall to make sure somebody can't come in through the ceiling with a sawzall. There's an internal cage that you would need a blowtorch to get through just to get weed. So, and then inside of that cage, there's usually a vault.
Yes.
There you go. So it's not like an easy security system. You see property values tend to get a nice little bump when the dispensary goes into town. You tend to see in states where marijuana's been legalized, youth usage actually go down, not up. Employment, that's another great thing. And so these businesses tend to hire local, and you can even make that a requirement as far as a factor into who gets approved here. These jobs all pay well above the minimum wage. And oh, we modeled everything after the Casino Control Commission here. So when I say the background checks for who's getting into the industry are intense, it is not an easy thing to do to pass one of these things. I don't know if I can pass one of them.
So any questions, we're here to happily answer whatever they may be. I can explain the whole hemp issue. I can explain what happens at liquor stores. I'm involved in all. I've been here a long time. That's actually likely going to be then cleaned up in the next couple of weeks. The legislature's actively moving a bill there.
Mm-hmm.
That will also allow for towns to collect revenue there.
Awesome.
So,
thank you.
Any questions? Good. All right.
Anybody online?
No, there's not.
Anybody? Mr. Fisher, please come forward.
Thank you, Mayor. Mark Fisher, 91 3rd Avenue.
Mr. Fisher, just wait a second. There's a lot of activity. The Bollingers did not want to hear what you had to say. Welcome home, Wes.
One thing I thought I would see tonight was the infamous bubble picture that was spoken about a couple of times with the that would show the distance from the perimeter of the school property. So everyone could see exactly where legal sales or manufacturing would be. But then kind of lay that over with the zoning and really pinpoint those properties that are, that would be available to purchase or lease where the businesses would have to be. I'm still unclear. I hear the light industrial, that's closer than 1,000 feet to the school. I hear the highway business district, that's probably far enough away from the school. But part of the highway business district would also maybe encroach on the Navisick school. I don't know. I don't know what those properties are. So can anybody tell us here where exactly these properties would be available to lease or purchase to open a business, to open a cannabis business? Where would they be?
Are you looking at, trying to find something?
Trying to find it. First of all, it's 500 feet, Mr. Fisher. It's okay. Not 1,000 feet. It's 500 feet current in this version of the ordinance.
Okay.
Did you attend the planning board consistency review?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was the only human being out here for that review. I think Mr. Smith was online. I'm not sure if there was anybody else.
I'm
All right, let's keep it clean, folks. I don't think we're going to be able to show that to you right now.
No, we'll get there.
Okay.
But I'm saying, not right this second.
I'm clicking through, I promise, but let me...
You're going to have to join the Zoom, too.
Yeah.
So we can put it on the screen.
Okay. So how about on a general scale? Where exactly would these properties be? I mean, we know they're not on First Avenue.
I mean, we did a workshop on this and discussed... And that did have visuals.
I know, but even back then it was unclear where exactly it was going to be. That was
quite a while.
It's prohibited on First Avenue.
We know that.
It's prohibited within 500 feet of the school.
Yes.
We approved.
Prohibited in a residential zone.
No residential.
Right.
So in practicality, mm-hmm. where could it probably go? And I'm going to remind, not everybody here goes to every planning board meeting, but there are people in the room that do go to every planning board meeting, and there was a proposed, not a cannabis, not an adult use cannabis shop, but a vape shop that was proposed for the Valley National Bank, and it was very clear from that application that there was not sufficient parking there, so although it would potentially be possible, based on a previous review, it does not seem likely, although it'd be allowable. So this is why they have to go to the planning board, because there's things like...
Well, it'd be allowable up until the time they go to the planning board, which mm-hmm. said there's zero parking at that.
Precisely. But yeah, we're talking about allowable.
Right.
We have discussed office residential being, again, the planning board would have to approve it, but office residential, so basically on the highway office residential.
Right.
Those places would be... Can somebody, whoever has a plastic, just stop for a second, because it's picking up everywhere. Would you like a moment to get your candy out?
Yes.
Okay.
Please. Or share.
I have that thing where you can't hear the, like, with chewing gum and all that drives me crazy.
Misophonia, right?
I have it.
Yeah. Got it.
the, so office residential would be considered potentially, but again, that would have to go before planning board, and it would be, again, considerations like parking and ingress and egress. Where are we?
So in the office residential zone, correct me if I'm wrong, along the highway.
It currently does not permit retail.
Currently does not permit retail.
But this ordinance would change that.
And, right. And the biggest building I can think of is a two-story office building, kind of wedged between houses, with parking, I think, on two sides. I think there's a veterinarian business in there. Obviously, the parking would not be enough. And it,
not as it exists, not as it, potentially not as it is currently formatted.
So other than that building, along that area, unless you knock houses down and rebuild the building, where else is there?
There, you, do you have it up?
I have it. So you can promote me to panelists, I can share it. I can share my screen.
That's why we put these screens in.
This is called,
this is it.
Mr. Crowley.
This is it.
Competition repeat.
This is tap dancing to get the visual.
He may be crinkling, but
I know it's in that
too. And then you're going to have to make the view equal.
All right. So.
We'll see what.
Here it comes.
Big reveal.
There we go. There it is. 500-foot radius from Blair Collins Elementary School.
Can you blow that up a little bit?
No. You asked for so much, Mr. Fisher.
Come on. Go
hold
like
on.
This.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Give me a second.
Go like this.
I'm trying. Where? Where?
And not residential. So, and like this is.
Move this Zoom bar.
Hold on. I'm moving it.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, great.
That's where it's disallowed.
So the circle up in that corner is where a creek is, so that's not allowed.
It's really more zooming out than zooming in. This is just where it's disallowed in any residential. So we're talking Highway 36, parts of West Avenue, where there is a facility, potentially the manufacturing building that where we do have manufacturing currently, which they make dog food. And they also, there's a pharmacist there, someone making compounds.
Okay.
And then Superfood Town Shopping Center, if the planning board approved the parking plan, along the highway, and that's basically, those are your options.
Okay. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Langsdorf, come on down.
Josh Weinstein, 60 Bayside Drive.
You better stay for the engineering report.
Sorry?
You better stay for the engineering report today.
Okay.
That's a preview.
I have only one concern, and that's the health of the people. And the important thing about this is to make sure that if people do smoke marijuana or take drugs of any kind, that they're safe and not adulterated. Everything else is just details. You don't want kids, if you don't give them a chance, I don't think people should do it. But I don't, you know, that's, this is, you don't stop the problem by saying, by forcing them into an underground economy where what they consume is not regulated. So I see this as a public health issue, and that's why I support it.
Thank you. Anyone online?
No one has their hands raised online.
Mr. Brown.
Good evening, Zach Brown, 6 Victorian Woods Drive. Drugs kill people. We put flags, purple flags, I think, outside Borough Hall to commemorate some of these deaths. How many flags do we know?
This year was it 40?
46.
It was like 44, 45, 46.
45, 46, those are all deaths attributable to opiates. And we currently have a business in town that sells opiates. Last time I checked, I've never seen a flag for cannabis-related, specifically related death.
If there were, I would have very different feelings. But the fact of the matter is that in my capacity as the first responder, I responded to calls, people who consumed cannabis that they purchased through an illicit source that was adulterated with some type of opiate, and they overdosed, and we had to come and save their lives. That is a physical impossibility with the products that would be coming from one of these businesses that would come to town if you permitted it. These illicit dealers are in town right now, maybe not right now, but like generally, they come here, people buy their products because they don't have, at least partially because they don't have a way to buy it legally in town. So if people are concerned about children, which I think their concerns are coming from the right place, I think we should all be concerned about the safety of our children, but as a couple of other people have mentioned tonight, best thing you can do to make this a safer town is to allow these businesses, legal, regulated, professional businesses, to come in and sell these products in a way that they cannot be adulterated. I think if you pass this ordinance a year from now, nobody's going to notice or care whether if these businesses are in town. I think I work in Red Bank. I drive by those dispensaries all the time. You don't even notice them. If you're not going out of your way to look for it, you don't even know that it's there. There was a time when these dispensaries first started opening that there were lines down the street. It doesn't happen anymore because they're all over the place. So they don't get that crowded. There's no lines. You can buy it online and just pick it up like you do with a pizza or, you know, prescription at a pharmacy. Having said all that, I do think this ordinance has some flaws. I think the lack of micro-business provisions are an opportunity for improvement. But I think if it's passed as is, that it gives us the opportunity. It's a nice middle ground between people like myself who would like to see all classes of businesses allowed everywhere in town, and people who would prefer to not see any of it in town. I think this is a good compromise. And I think a lot of the people who had concerns will see that if this does pass and these businesses do come to town, that a lot of their worst fears will not come to pass. And that a year from now, we'll be talking about expanding this ordinance and allowing more different types of businesses after having seen that they've been in town and nobody has died. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Somebody online?
No.
Okay. So, yes, ma'am.
Good evening, Laura Spicer, 6 Victoria Woods Drive. I missed the beginning of this discussion, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating anything, but I just wanted to say that this, I'm sure that there's a lot of tense moments and a lot of emotions going around, but I feel like this is like a moment to be so proud of the country that we live in, and the fact that we can all come here and have different opinions and still be neighbors at the end of the night. And I think you guys have done an amazing job doing this. You took your time, a little bit more time than I think I personally would have liked, but I'm so proud that we're having this discussion, that everyone's being heard, and that hopefully it's been respectful for everybody, and that we can all feel comfortable moving forward. I feel like this is such a great opportunity because yes, money shouldn't be the reason to do anything. You're talking to a libertarian socialist, so I feel like the money's not really the argument here, but when I hear that a business is dropping off a check to a municipality for $250,000, I'm thinking that's a pollinator garden at Borough Hall, that's a rain garden in the marina, that's municipal composting at the borough yard, that could be an open air market at the harbor, like something like in Charleston, that could be a community center so that the next hurricane that hits, everybody has a place to be, we can do a generator exchange, all the things that we need to do to be prepared as a community, and that could be the dreaded like knotweed removal invasive plant project that we can all like decide that we're finally ready to invest in, like making sure the environment is the best it can be. I think that the funds that could come to this open the doors to all of those projects that are not as important as the things that you guys deal with on a regular basis. And it allows the volunteers who care so much about this town and have all these great ideas and want to do more for the town. It enables them to do those projects without affecting the really important stuff that you guys do up here. So I just want to take a moment to say I'm so appreciative that you guys are doing this. I think it's a great moment to be optimistic for our community and the country as a whole, because we're allowed to come together and have different opinions in a respectful space. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else that hasn't spoken yet? Sir?
Tana Quinn, Central Avenue, Atlantic Island. I understand that marijuana is now a legal drug. But what my concern is, why do we need to bring a dispensary to our lovely town of Atlantic Island when anyone that wants to get this legal drug can, they don't have to drive that far. They can go to Redmond to a dispensary there. And I believe there are dispensary in Highland. They can go to Highland. Why do they have to, why do we have to open one up here? A few years ago, they wanted to put a Wawa on Avenue D. Okay, and it was turned down because we just opened a 7-Eleven. And we, they...
That's incorrect, sir.
What's that?
That's incorrect.
Okay.
That part of... Just so, because I don't want to spread misinformation, that's really important.
Okay.
So there was a potential Wawa coming in. Only part of the property was in Atlantic Highlands, and the rest of the property was in Middletown. So both there, it went before both planning boards. It had nothing to do with the 7-Eleven.
Okay. Okay. Why do we need a dispensary here in Atlantic Highlands when we have one in Red Bank and Highlands?
I am the mayor of the borough of Atlantic Highlands, and I still believe it's fiscally irresponsible for this mayor and council and the previous mayor and councils to not investigate what the benefits would be to the town. So no one's trying to shove anything down anybody's throat. This has been a really long, careful, and very well-researched process, and we're having a public hearing right now so that people like you can express your opinion, just like people who disagree with you can express their opinion.
I was looking at the ordinance. If the hours of this dispensary, if one is approved in our town, it's going to be open 7 days a week, and it's going to be open from 9 a.m. Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m., and on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.?
This doesn't say that it has to be open during those hours. This says that what the permittable hours would be, the business owner would decide.
Okay. But I just think that would be a bit much to have open, you know,
you.
All those hours.
Okay.
And we have to think of the ramifications of a dispensary here in our town. Yes, I understand it was mentioned that you have to show ID to go into the dispensary if you're over 18, and then you have to show ID at the point of sale. But then people that buy the drug, when they leave, they're smoking this drug. Okay.
They may not be smoking. There's many, many ways to consume adult use cannabis.
But one of the ways would be to smoke it.
Could be.
So now they're in the community. Okay, we're a family oriented community where there are children. There's a school down the street. Okay.
Do you mean the school that's across this right across the street from the brewery, or do you mean the preschool on the highway?
Say that again.
Which school do you mean? Are you talking about the one next to the brewery and the bar, or the one on the highway that's a preschool?
Both.
I don't know what your question is.
I'm just saying the ramifications of this. Okay, people are buying this drug at a dispensary.
A highly regulated drug at a dispensary, and there are very, very specific regulations that say how people can consume them, and it's not in public.
What's not in public?
You can't consume cannabis in public.
Oh, so they won't be consuming this in public.
They won't be doing any use, making any use of cannabis that emits an odor.
Okay, but now just but everyone, as we know, everyone does not follow the rules.
And
that's
what law enforcement's in place for.
It's okay.
Okay, folks, we're trying to all be respectful.
That's all I wanted to bring up.
Thank you.
We have one in Highland. We have one in Red Bank. We need one in our lovely town of Atlanta. Thank you for
I see that the owner of the cannabis facility in Highlands is here, so he may think so. I see that the owner of the cannabis facility in Highlands is here, so he may think so.
He may think what?
That we could use one here, too. Thank you, Kenneth.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else online?
No. No one has their hands raised.
Any new person to speak here? Okay, I feel like we've had a lot of conversation about this. If anybody that has already spoken has something new to say, but if it's just repeating something from before, I'm going to shut you down. So, okay,
Come on up.
I know I spoke whatever. Deborah Pillows, Simpson Ave. So, Councilman Dougherty, can you just make it clear to everyone that that 72% vote was to legalize the use of cannabis in New Jersey, not to, that vote wasn't Atlantic County people saying we want these establishments in our town. Can you
do you that? Want me to read the text of the full text of
no,
the question?
I'm please do, actually. That would probably be really
no, I'm happy to do it. So, question one, 2020, New Jersey. Public question one. Here we go. Constitutional amendment to legalize marijuana. Do you approve amending the Constitution to legalize a controlled form of marijuana called cannabis? Only adults at least 21 years of age could use cannabis. The state commission created to oversee the state's medical cannabis program would also oversee the new personal use cannabis market. Cannabis products would be subject to the state sales tax. If authorized by the legislature, a municipality may pass a local ordinance to charge a local tax on cannabis products. If you voted yes, that was what you were agreeing to.
Okay, so the simple answer would have been, it didn't mean that the people wanted it in Atlantic Highlands. The vote wasn't...
That's what public comment's for here tonight.
Right, I understand that, but I just want to make that clear to people. Secondly, so we had other people speaking that have opened these establishments, right? And twice somebody said that veterans and seniors, it's such a great access for them, the medicinal use. Well, I hate to say that if veterans and seniors needed medical marijuana, they could get it from a doctor. So we're not just helping veterans and seniors with this that are in pain or whatever, PTSD. Third of all, I don't appreciate that the owner from Aberdeen, well, of course, Aberdeen, was he was chuckling in the audience because there were questions from residents that live here that are very invested in this town, and what works for Matawan and Red Bank and other places doesn't necessarily work for Lance County. Thank you. I'm done.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to allow one last opportunity. Oh, is it Mr. Music?
Yes.
I'm going to open a candy while he's coming up.
One that was brought to mind, we had the map up there with the distance from the school, and I know it was 500 feet from the school, and it looked like on the map that was like 500 feet from the center, like, you know, like if you drop a pin on where it's Atlantic County School. Is that what the measurement is, or is the school property goes, I would suspect, close to 500 feet?
It defines it
down the block.
From this.
From the boundaries of the property?
From the boundaries of the property.
Yeah. Okay. We had also brought up the daycare on Route 36. I'm not sure if it's exactly...
It's Middletown, so it... Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, so potentially it would be permitted to be adjacent to that on the town.
Under our ordinance, it wouldn't be.
For this ordinance. Okay.
But everything surrounding that is Middletown.
Okay. I do send my children there also, so it's just, you know, it would still be close to a place where there's young children, so whether it's, you know... Actually, in Milltown, Atlantic Islands, you know, I just think that would be a consideration. Just finally, I would just say, improve, you know, a lot of things. And, you know, I understand that, you know, the arguments, you know, for, and just, you know, as a citizen of the town here and a resident here, you know, I understand that, you know, people with businesses may have a vested interest, obviously, in their business and growing this business. And I see that there's a lot of talk about, you know, opportunity and the money it could bring to town. And sometimes it seems like we're already ready to start spending money that we don't have here. Just to me, as a resident with children here, there's no amount of money to me that would be worth it. There's a lot of promises that are made. You know, maybe everything would all come true, but I just think there is also just a strong sentiment here that people, you know, despite all that, want to show us up.
Thank you. This is the real last call, folks. Mr. Barbado, as long as it's not repeating what you said before.
I won't repeat.
Okay.
Well, Barbado, sir. 22 Lori Road, a.k.a. Mousy Road, but I just want to say...
You repeated that. And by the way, thank you for wearing your St. Peter's shirt last week. I did notice.
You did notice my shirt? I was going to wear it again. So tell your mother I said hello.
I will.
As a graduate of the same
Okay. And as it relates to cannabis.
Okay. The situation really is, I make things very easy, but people don't make it easy for me. I was a public servant for 35 years.
Again, you're repeating yourself.
Well, no, I didn't say that.
You did.
Yes, you did.
I just said, but I didn't say how many years.
You did.
No, you did. You did.
Very technical.
You were in the field.
I didn't say 35 years. And I also was a special education teacher at one point in time, and a high school teacher. The purpose of these rules and regulations and compliance, and they're going to follow the laws and everything. Well, I was an administrator at one point in time for compliance, rules, and regulations. Why do we have that? Because people do not follow the rules all the time, like one of the other residents said. You know, rules are to be broken. And look at all the politicians, I don't want to get into it, are going to jail because they're not following the rules.
Okay, we're not going there.
Well, we're not.
You just did.
Well, I didn't go into detail. But I'm just saying, you're going to do all these rules, procedures, and everything. Wonderful. But I don't think they're going to be followed that tightly.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
And I think that's important to know.
I think that it's important that you've shared that opinion.
And the last thing you said, with all that money you're going to get, we're going to open up a dog park.
We didn't say what we were going to do with it.
Well, you said you can use the money
we
for
could.
A dog park.
Someone gave an example of what they did in a different
well,
town.
I don't have a dog.
Maybe you should get a dog. All right, sir, you may come forward, but I'm trying real hard to give last call here.
Very, very fast, because I want to go watch Indiana Jones. Brian Gortzecker, 88 East Parkfield Avenue. Feelings, opinions aside, everybody's got them. I've never smoked marijuana. I don't care if you do. I don't care if you don't. But statistically speaking, new marijuana users aren't created from dispensaries in town. They are created when it is legalized. It's been legalized. So we are doing nothing but missing an opportunity to cash in on what has already been done. My 11-year-old daughter isn't going to start smoking weed if she decides she wants to when she's older because there's a dispensary in town. If she wants to, she's going to seek it out. And that is why drug dealers are on the streets. But by having something that is in the town, that is regulated, and is a safer option, is going to give these people an option to find it in a safer, more regulated way. That's it.
Thank you. I really want to thank the public for having such a respectful conversation. I think it was really, it was a good conversation, and it brought out a range of views, and we've been talking about this for years, ever since the state proposed this. And I guess I need to ask the council if there's any further discussion.
I'm good.
Okay. Mrs. Clark.
We need a motion.
No, we made a motion.
Motion's been made and seconded.
To adopt, so I guess we need a roll call.
Mr. Colasardo?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Sorry. This is to close public comment?
Nope, to vote. We're voting.
On the ordinance.
Yes.
Mrs. Cusick?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Ms. Forbes?
Yes.
Mr. Kuhlhaus?
Yes.
Ordinance 9-2025 has passed.
Thank you, everybody. I want to thank Council Member Cusick and our attorney and people of the past who have worked on this. I want to thank members of the industry who have held workshops. We've held multiple workshops. And again, nobody makes any promises up here because Helen Marchetti told me I never should. But I can tell you that this council is committed to proper vetting of any application that would come forward. I think we've already considered amending one part of the ordinance as it relates to manufacture to make sure that it's codified that we would not allow volatile materials. So, congratulations, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a whole rest of a meeting to come. And any members of the public who would like to excuse themselves now because you were only here for this, we will see you next time. And hopefully Mr. Barbado will bring back his St. Peter's shirt.
Definitely in the next meeting.
Okay. All right, now it's time for public comment on consent and regular agenda items.
Workshop.
Oh,
Drew, you're here. It's all, poor Drew. We should have moved it. I'm sorry. There were questions at our last meeting about improving parks, and our friend Drew of CME is here to give us a workshop overview.
I have two PowerPoints. If you tell me which one to put up, I can do that.
You want to put the East Avenue Park CDBG one on first?
CDBG, okay.
My light is on?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
While we're getting the PowerPoint up, we're going to take a 2-minute break.
Didn't take much minutes.
Okay.
That's the right one, right?
My name is Drew Pavlik. I'm an engineer with CME Associates. We've been working on a couple of grant applications on behalf of the borough. I'm here to present for public comment two of these applications. The first one being the Community Development Block Grant Program, CDBG. It's federal money that's distributed through the county, through the Office of Community Development. The project we want to apply for, the borough and CME, we want to apply for money for is for East Avenue Park. If you can go to the next slide. So East Avenue Park is between East Lincoln. It's on East Avenue, obviously, between East Lincoln and East Garfield. It's a small park. The borough already has $67,000 from LRIG, I think that's local recreation, I forget what it stands for. It's through NJDCA.
You got the money.
But that's not quite enough to do everything that we want to do. So we're going to ask for an additional $275,000. You can go to the next slide. We'll ask for the maximum $200,000. The total project we estimate to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $275,000, and that would include new playground structure, reconstruct the basketball court, including the asphalt and the net and post and the whole goal, and other landscaping improvements, including benches, tables, trash cans, that kind of stuff. That is pretty much the gist of this application. If anyone would like to speak on, if anyone has any comments or questions about this application, this is very basic right now. We're just asking for money. There's no concept drawing yet. It's very preliminary at this point.
I'd like to know, why are we asking for $67,000 if we don't have a definitive idea of what we want to do?
That money has already been granted through a different program. I was not involved in the preparation of that. I'm sure that it includes, I think that's a smaller program.
I can answer that question, Drew. We've been rotating priority-wise around the borough, improving our parks. So this is what it costs to bring this park to the standard of the other parks that we have improved, and this would bring the project cost estimate to $275,000. So this is a grant, this is not a loan, this is money that we're asking for them to invest in the municipality.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Anyone in the public? When we do the concept design, we'll have a public meeting with neighbors, which we've done for the last few parks that we've done, including South Avenue. I can tell you South Avenue residents were very pleased with the process, and the Minnemind Avenue playground is great too. It has sensory elements, so we would want to do things like that to make it inclusive in East Avenue Park. Let's move on to the next one.
One question, Drew. So
yes.
This is for 2026. So when is this application due? When would we get word back on if we were successful?
The application is due, I believe, in July.
It's due very, very soon.
Okay.
And I think I don't want to give you any wrong information, but it's later in the year.
Approximate?
I think it's around October, November.
Nice. Okay. Great. Just wanted to know timeline.
Same timeline for the next project.
Nice.
Go
So that is the East Avenue Park CDBG project. The next application the borough would like to go for is through Monmouth County Open Space. That's through the through the park system, not the community development. This is a little bigger grant program. The maximum ask is $500,000, $500,000. So the project here would be to improve the municipal harbor park. If you could see on the map here, so the work would include resurfacing of the, or essentially reconstruction of the tennis and pickleball, or I'm sorry, right now the tennis courts, the basketball court, replacement of the playground equipment, replacement of the basketball goals, hoops, repainting all of the courts, including conversion of some of the tennis court, possible conversion of some of the tennis courts to pickleball, and then other site amenities like fence, mulch, that kind of stuff. The total construction cost estimate, if you can go to the next slide, is a little over $500,000. So we're hoping the, if we were granted the full amount, the full ask, we'd be able to cover the vast majority of the improvements.
Awesome. Any comment from the public? Yes, please come forward, Mrs. Spicer.
I was wondering if in your plans there's any way there would be a crosswalk from like where the tennis courts are closest to the Shore Casino building. I've just noticed, I don't know if it's just me, but when I'm walking my dogs around the marina, I often like go by the tennis courts and try to get to the waterfront, and there's just not a great way to cross that street if you're coming from where the chessboards used to be.
I think that would probably be more talking to the chief about that. So, but I myself did a crossing to a 100th birthday party last week, and I noticed something similar. So,
very good point.
Thank you.
It's unlikely that the grant would cover that since it's on the parcel itself.
Any other questions from the public, Mr. Lansdorf? Please come. Oh boy.
Didn't Doug say there was a preliminary thing about basically, I've been talking for decades about basically turning the water, the part of the harbor that's at the water's edge into a park before you put $500,000 into the pickleball or whatever you're going to do? Is there any way to swap that land to turn what's now the park into parking and put the park next to the water? Doug had mentioned some plan, some preliminary plan of, you know, building as part of the, I think, flood control, building a berm and having some kind of park, like what you're doing over on Avenue D.
What I'm doing? Wow, well, you give me a lot of credit.
What the borough did over on Avenue D, which is to turn the part that's right next to the water into a park and put the parking in the back.
I think, well, for now, we're not getting specific but in the grant about everything that we're going to do down there, so I would say I'm not going to like totally say no to that it's not possible to consider that, but I know also that we've got the bulkhead going in, so there's, in terms of timing, it might not be the right time to do anything right at the waterfront.
Well, I'm just saying before you put $500,000 into some
money that they're giving us,
before you even ask for, consider can you consider this basic philosophical difference I've had, you know, for decades, that the most valuable real estate in the Grand Economist, which is the waterfront, should not be parking.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. We have been workshopped. Thanks.
Thank you very much, everyone.
I should have switched the agenda items. I'm really sorry, but you got to hear so much great comment about cannabis.
I learned a lot.
You did. Dave Hunger. Okay, now we're really having public comment on consent and regular agenda items. May I have a motion and a second? Oh, no, I gotta get your comments first. Yes, sir, please come forward and tell us how happy you are.
That's you learned a lot. John Weber, I'm a resident of Bradley Beach. I don't live here. I work for Oceana, and that's in that capacity I'm speaking tonight. Oceana is the largest nonprofit group in the world that just does ocean advocacy and ocean conservation. I'm here to talk about your resolution 98, opposing offshore oil drilling.
Oh, did you give me your Bradley Beach address? I want to know how close you live to PEG.
I am 313 Lorraine Avenue. Your counselor does have a house down the street, and I don't see her as much as I used to. Her house is getting a lot of construction. Anyway, but thank you very much. So, back to oil drilling. Pardon the pun here, but this is not a drill because the administration in Washington, D.C. has unveiled a plan to literally drill for oil everywhere, and I mean everywhere offshore. If it's wet, they want to drill there. The very initial stage, they're taking comments, they've requested information. They may not end up having a final plan that says drilling everywhere, but that's where we come in. There's been plans like this in the past, even in the late in the Obama administration, and certainly in the first Trump administration, there are plans to drill for oil, and it sounds like yours that pushed back against these plans, and we have towns and cities in, especially in the Southeast, who have passed resolutions saying their towns don't want this. This is what ultimately convinced the governors of those states and the federal administration that they weren't going to drill for oil. I kind of feel like it's a little different this time, so I really urge you to support this, and I really appreciate it. Today is the last day of this initial comment period. So if you happen to pass this, there's something even more you can do to make it more effective, and we'll make a comment about your clerk. I had the random pleasure of being a poll worker in your town. So I already know that you have a dedicated clerk who works very hard. And so the deadline is midnight tonight. I know this has already been a long meeting. If there's any way that this resolution, if it passes and then can get certified and get uploaded and comment into the federal administration, I know it's a lot to ask. If that doesn't happen, it will be a perfectly fine comment for a future comment period, because there will be future comment periods, because we don't think they're going to take that. There's literally 50,000 comments already in this comment period. We don't think they're going to look at all of them and say, oh, those people didn't want it, let's not do it. We think they're going to go forward. So there will be a future comment period. If you can get in tonight, great. I know it's a lot to ask, but appreciate your time, appreciate you putting this on the agenda, getting it onto the agenda, everybody, and I believe you pass it. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. And just as a,
as
a point of record, the mayor of Atlantic Highlands is a trustee of the Tidelands Resource Council, so the decision to put this on the agenda was made by the council president.
Appreciate it. And any questions that we have to ask? Okay, County, no brainer. Thanks very much.
All right. Any other, Mr. Landstory?
John Lansdor, 60 Bayside Drive. Our daughter works for the Northern Drilling Company in the Gulf, and she assures me there will never be oil drilling off the New Jersey shore because they are not going to drill where there's winter.
Interesting.
Right.
Until there's no winter, yes.
Winter's coming away.
Winter is not coming. Mr. Krause. I hope everybody ate something, by the way.
James Krause, 77 Bayside Drive, and I resisted this earlier, a.k.a. or scenic, a.k.a. a lovely road. Two of the worst environmental disasters in American history that I can remember have been the oil spillage, I guess, in Alaska. It was probably from the ship, but also in the Gulf with the
Exxon Valdez.
It's just, I mean, we're trying to move away from fossil fuel oil. We shouldn't encourage this.
We are. Others are.
Yes. We in Atlantic Islands are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe not me, yes, because I don't have any to be, but
there were three cars on the charger when I came this evening.
So
thank you.
I encourage you to pass this, and if gentleman from Bradley Beach.
He's right behind you.
If you can take a suggestion to try to get it in before the night, thank you.
Michelle, we're sleeping over. Anybody else? Anyone online?
There is no one with their hands raised online.
Okay. May I have a motion and a second?
Motion.
Second.
Any further discussion on anything here?
Absolutely not.
Mayor, if I could just request that we pull 99-2025, the endorsement of the Fair Share Plan. Mr. Van Nicoy, the planner, is here to answer any questions anyone might have. That would be the only reason to pull it from consent.
And you've been here the whole time, too. Oh, buddy.
It's very educational.
Okay, so I'm going to, let's do that, if everybody's okay with it. But I would like to bring him up. Yeah, if anybody has any questions, maybe we don't have to separate it out.
Okay, perfect.
I don't have a formal presentation.
No. It's just bringing you closer, and you don't have to introduce yourself and state your name and address. I guess if you could just tell us effectively where we're at.
Just like a
brief overview. Yeah, have a seat.
So I have my presentation on my phone, actually, so it'll be the quickest and easiest at this point. Basically, we have this process that's been going on for, to go way back a number of years, probably in like 40 plus years at this point. But the latest iteration of it is, as of March of last year, they introduced legislation that initiated the fourth round of affordable housing. And so that kind of started the timeline for this round. And we had it in January. There was obligations that were passed down from the state of New Jersey, basically assigned to the different municipalities. And a resolution was passed to acknowledge those obligations. And then the next major milestone is June 30th of this year, which is to adopt the housing plan and the fair share plan. So we're on track with that. We have the planning board adopted it. That's as in their role as the entity responsible for the master plan. The second half of that document, the first half is the housing element, the second half is the fair share plan, is generally more oriented toward ordinances, which is the responsibility of the governing body. And so that's what we're here for tonight, is to ask if the governing body to consider endorsing the housing plan on the fair share plan. What it is the second step that essentially fully enacts it, let's say, and for court review. And basically, it goes into court from July 1st through August 31st. There's an objective time period, so we'll kind of wait and see. I'm not aware of any issues or concerns, but we're in the same boat as every other town. That's just the standard part of the process. And then after that, between September 1st and March of next year, we would have time to create the ordinances. Along with that, will be updated manuals for like any rental. Mentally units, sales units, there's no rehabilitation obligation, but we'd have to do a, actually in your case, I don't even know if we'd have to do a rental manual. I think we might get a complete pass on that. So, a number of documents, and they could be, discussed and considered sometime this fall, let's say, or early next year. And that's a real quick overview of the process.
Thank you very, very much. And I think, we had accepted, and this council is very dedicated to affordable housing in Atlantic Highlands, so this doesn't mean that we're not going to half-ass this. We are going to try to encourage affordable housing units to be developed in Atlantic Highlands. It's a percentage is required currently of any new build, but we are also looking to proactively find places that we can build or convert housing into affordable housing, and we're very committed to that. So we're not looking to shy away from an affordable housing requirement. We all agree that that is something that is necessary in Atlantic Highlands. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
You can go home now.
One moment. Just for the record and for the benefit of anyone, I know the answer to this, but can you briefly just say there's a number that's in this that's been put forward, but what are our other options moving forward?
Yeah, so great question. So the fourth round obligation is 48 units. And that's the new construction obligation, is the term I would put on it. It's technically called the prospective needs. It's basically looking forward over the next 10 years. So you have the time frame for the fourth round is 2025 through 2035. and of those 48 units, basically what we're allowed to do, what was done in the third round is take a vacant land adjustment, because you're approaching or at build-out, you know, roughly. And at the time of the third round's analysis, you know, in terms of the vacant land adjustment, at that time, all the vacant properties were evaluated, they were recognized in the third round plan, and there's an RDP calculated at that point, which I think was 42 units or something along those lines. And so we had to do the same thing for the fourth round. And of course, unless you had a property that's been recently made vacant through demolition or otherwise, the results generally going to be zero or very close to it. And that's what happened in this case. So there is 48 unit obligation, but the real estate development potential is zero. And essentially, just real quick definition on that term and one other term. So your real estate development potential, you would have to typically identify specific projects and specific units to address it. In Atlantic Island's case, it's zero. So you don't have to take that specific approach, let's say. The remainder of that, which in this case is the full 48 units, is called the unmet need. And in that case, you can use overlay zoning, which you already have in place. You could use municipal-wide set-aside ordinance, which you already have in place. And then also you can apply any excess age-restricted units, which you happen to have some of those. And then also any new projects, which you have, I think, one under construction and two that are just in the conceptual planning phase. And so those have been recognized in the plan. They're all applied to the unmet need. And the last detail on that, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, is there's language in the legislation that says you have to address 25% of your adjusted need with lands that are likely to redevelop. And it doesn't have to be the redevelopment process necessarily. It's just recognizing that properties that might have a building on them where you may want to see.
Like an old school?
What's
like an old school, perhaps?
Oh, yeah.
Like a vacant old school.
Old school, like if there's, a property that's struggling, that's only partially filled, you know, whatever the case may be. And so the projects that we identified in there and the ordinances cover that base. It is new territory, like this round, the regulations are new for everybody, so we think we've got, I'm confident we definitely do have a very solid plan, but we're going to submit it to the court. The court's inevitably going to have comments, as they always do. And so we should get those comments probably either during that July 1st through August 31st time period or shortly after. And so we'll look to the attorneys for more information on that part of the process.
Great. Thank you so much.
I have a question. I'm not too familiar with the item, but can existing units do this? Can existing units opt to say, I have five units in my building, can I do one? As an affordable housing unit?
You could, yeah. That would be like generally a market to affordable type program. You could do that. It's got to be deed restricted for 40 years mm-hmm. under the plan. Mm-hmm. And so like anyone who would propose that, I would say you'd want to look at the financials for that, because a lot of times, you know, it may or may not work depending on your project in terms of the financial benefit, but absolutely. And one of the ways that we see that applied frequently, that tends to work really well, are like special needs housing for like autism or MS or otherwise. They generally buy a ranch home, a single family home, and just retrofit it to make it ADA accessible. And you get quite a few credits actually from those types of projects. That's like the most common, I would say, market to affordable type of project.
And then that would have deducted our 48 required units.
Absolutely, yeah. That could apply against the obligation. And that unmet need that I mentioned, it's the more units that we can kind of accrue and apply over the next 10 years, the better, because if you can actually satisfy the entire 48, you're in an even stronger position. Like you're in a strong position now, but that would be like even the next level, I guess you could say.
But it has to be like a group home or ADA compliant building?
That's just one of a couple different types. I mean, it could be a four-cell unit, like Habitat for Humanity. I know you have a couple in town already. It could be like a small townhouse development, small rental building. But the special needs units are just one example, and they're actually like pretty common, and you get, they're credited by bedroom. And so like one, if you did one for sale ranch, let's say it's a three bedroom ranch home, and it was a for sale unit, you get one credit. For special needs, you get three credits because it's credited per bedroom, and you get three bonus credits, one for each bedroom. So you get six credits for that one unit.
And if a landlord opts to do this, does he get any tax breaks, state funding, nothing like that?
They would, if it's owned by a nonprofit, there might be tax breaks there. Some cases it's owned by just that, you know, we're profit, we're nonprofit, and it's leased to a special needs operator, and they have to be licensed by the state. So there's, you know, I don't know the mechanics of the taxes, depending on the situation, in great detail, but,
I think we can have a workshop on this, like a training.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think you can go home now, but let's see if one of them wants to keep you. All right, have a great night. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Carrie.
Okay, I don't remember if I had a motion in a second, did I?
Yes.
Okay, I did. According to Mrs. Clark, I did. And we didn't separate it out. So now we can have a roll call.
Mr. Felizardo?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mrs. Cusick?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Ms. Forbes?
Yes.
Mr. Pujols?
Yes.
Items on the consent agenda have passed.
All right, I am going to ask the you know what? God, I was going to let you leave early, but we have executive session. Ugh. All right. Administrator's reports. Mr. Farragina. And then you can go into the engineering report.
On June 3rd, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., I attended the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs Virtual Shared Services Symposium that featured the community benefits of shared service agreements. On Thursday, June 12th, I joined the Atlantic Highlands Police Department Officer Erica Hoffman and Police Chief Scott Reiner at the New Jersey Police Accreditation Commission Review. I am pleased to report that Chief Reiner did an outstanding job in his presentation to the commissioners. As a result, the department was unanimously voted to be re-accredited. It is worth noting that of all the police departments in attendance, Atlantic Highlands was the only municipality whose administrator joined the department in support of its re-accreditation. This was also the case 3 years ago. It was also the case 3 years ago when I joined Chief Reiner and Captain Mirza. DEP drought warning update. With recent improvements to water supplies, the department lifted the statewide drought warning this week. Due to persistent deficits in groundwater and stream flow, the department is moving the coastal south drought region to a drought watch. Everyone across the state is encouraged to continue following water conservation practices to help manage supplies should dry conditions reemerge this summer. During the last council meeting, a resident inquired about the black containers and or drums located at Brant Point, as well as the 15-mile-per-hour signs on Brant Point. The borough engineer was assigned to look into the matter and has reported the following. The site was observed and found no drums or storage containers as previously described in the vicinity of the cul-de-sac. Therefore, the drums must have been removed. Regarding the 15-mile-per-hour signs, when the development was proposed and presented to the Planning Zoning Board, Brant Point was approved to be 15-mile-per-hour. This was based on geometric and AASHTO design guidelines, which is the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. In addition, regarding the Food Town Shopping Center sidewalk improvements, our engineer connected with the owner and private contractor, confirming that all approvals for the proposed work are now in hand, including municipal approval with bonding, and the contractor anticipates mobilizing to the site the week of July 7th to commence work. Obviously, it's contingent upon appropriate weather conditions. Reminder that summer hours are in effect at Borough Hall. Offices are open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Fridays, 8 a.m. to 12 noon, and that is through the month of August. Please be aware that the Atlantic Highlands Library will be closed this Thursday, June 19th, in observance of Juneteenth, and will reopen, resuming regular hours this Friday. Borough Hall offices will be closed this Friday, June 20th, in observations of Juneteenth, per the mayor's request. The next borough council meeting will be held Monday, July 21st at 7 p.m. Please note that the borough calendar incorrectly has noted that there's also a meeting on July 3rd, which, again, is that's incorrect. So the only meeting in July, council meeting, is the 21st. We will reiterate this on the borough website, the borough Facebook page, and the borough bulletin board. Mayor, that's all I have. Thank you.
Cool. Ms. Schaefer.
Mayor, I have nothing to report.
Thank God.
Do you need to leave?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we got very brief reports of council.
Can we show them how it's done?
I would love for you to show them how it's done.
fire department, we have the fireman's fair on July 1st and July 5th. Fireworks are going to be on for July 3rd. Rain date is July 5th. If you want to volunteer, and we always need volunteers from fireman's fair, contact Brian Sheehan, and he will work with you to get you set up to volunteer. Shade Tree, we have a meeting Wednesday at 7 o'clock in this building. Harbor, no formal report, but July 19th is Film One Fest. We hope to see you there as well. It's a great event. And Chamber, there was a meet and greet on June 10th. Some of the people in this audience were at the meet and greet. It was held on the Mariner. I was there. It was a great time. Done.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Crowley.
No recreation report, as recreation will meet on later this week, I think on Thursday. DPW, Street Department. New solar red light blinking lights have been installed on a few stop signs on Hennessy Boulevard. Brush pickup. Currently, the DPW is out conducting brush pickup. At this time, Zone 1 has been completed. Crews start pickup in Zone 4 today. Basin repairs. Four storm basins within the borough will be repaired in the coming weeks by an outside contractor. Sanitation. A printing error was made in the borough calendar with the recycling schedule for the month of June. We apologize for that, but a reminder that recycling is every other week for all residents, depending on what zone you are in, Zone 2 and 3, or Zone 1 and 4. Last thing here, AH Elementary School, DPW recently obtained used lawn equipment purchased from the AH Elementary School. Police report, we'll be dividing that up with Councilperson Cusack. I will report out on two things. During the month of May, there were 8 arrests. There were 30 first aid calls and 14 fire calls and 250 traffic stops. There will be filming in the area of Mother Teresa Regional School on June 30th and July 1st. Both days will have a road closure on South Avenue between Avenue D and Avenue C, with some other intermittent closures in the area on July 1st. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay, for senior citizens, I want to thank the mayor for providing a proclamation for one of the members of the senior club who is turning 100 years old next week, in 2 weeks. And it was a wonderful event that was held on Monday in celebration with her. But thank you, Mayor. It was very appreciated. Just a piece of information, the Monmouth County Division on Aging is holding listening sessions throughout the county on successful aging in place. Anyone who's interested in hearing some of that information or providing some testimony, please contact the County Division on Aging at 732-431-7450. Again, it helps if I have my glasses on. OEM will be sharing some information with my colleague, Mr. Behals. There was an exercise last month, and some follow-up recommendations are being considered at this point. The nurse on our committee wanted to make sure that there's a healthcare alert sent out to if you're traveling overseas, please make sure you get your measles titer checked. It's just a good precaution because of the measles outbreak. Shade Tree Commission, again, meets on Wednesday, no other report. And police report, the section that I'm responsible for. Due to an increase in motor vehicle crashes at the intersection of West Avenue and East Highland, red flashing lights that you did mention have been installed on top of the stop signs to get drivers' attention. I know I was shocked when I saw it yesterday when I was driving. Oh, my goodness, we got lights. And again, thanks to Jim Phillips and the DPW crew for putting that in. Nightly road work will be completed at State Highway 36 East between the hours of 7 p.m. and 5 a.m. this week, June 16th to the 19th. And lastly, East Garfield Avenue will be closed between 1st Avenue and 3rd Avenue from 617 to 620 for utility work at the Masonic Temple lot. That is my report for today.
Thank you, Council President Dougherty.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening. Finance and Personnel, no report. Recreation, no report. There is a meeting on Thursday the 19th at 5:30. Thank you, Councilman Carley. Planning Board, I have two Planning Board meetings to report on tonight very briefly. First, the Board met on June 5th for its regular meeting. The Board conducted its Master Plan Consistency Review for Ordinance 9 and determined the ordinance was not inconsistent with the Master Plan. One application, 12 Bayside Drive, was dismissed at the applicant's request. Four others, 22 Prospect Circle, 99 Center Avenue, 2 Hill Road, and 46 Second Avenue, were carried to either the July 15th or August 7th meetings. The board met for a special meeting on June 12th to review and consider the Affordable Housing Fair Share Plan. As you heard from Mr. Vandenkoy, the board designated planner. He gave a detailed presentation at that meeting, and it was unanimously adopted and approved. The Atlantic Highlands Borough will meet the state-mandated deadline of June 30th to submit that plan. DPW, Councilman Crowley already covered. Lastly, Board of Education met on June 11th. Atlantic Highlands Elementary, Student of the Month, Sheridan Gormley. Henry Hudson, Student of the Month, Juliana Brennan. Henry Hudson, Athlete of the Month, Ethan Hartsgrove. Artist of the Month, Rose McLaughlin. AHES Staff Member of the Month, Kim Voorhees. And Henry Hudson, Staff Member of the Month, Kelsey Ehalt. The board heard a presentation on the steam tanks at both elementary schools and approved a variety of appointments, staff, extracurricular, and athletic for the 2025-2026 school year. Speaking of school year, tomorrow is the last day of school. I wish all students, teachers, and staff a safe and restorative summer. That's it.
Thank you, Mayor. As Mr. Colasoto mentioned, no harbor report tonight, but I'll have an extra long one next time. Next meeting is July 1st at 7 p.m. here at Bell Hall, and no report for Green Team or Environmental Commission, which was covered last meeting. Their next meeting is June 22nd at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. Thank you. That's all.
The meeting is July 7th, not July 1st. It was changed due to the fireman's death.
Thank you. July 7th for the record.
And the 22nd is a Sunday, I think.
It's Tuesday.
Oh, it's the 8th. I lied. I'm sorry.
It's the 8th.
Blame her.
The record.
I thought it was the first and it was the 3rd.
Thank you, Mayor. I have no report today. We had the OEM, you know, took care of the FD. I'll be having a meeting tomorrow with EMS at 7 p.m. And I'll report the file for next meeting.
Cool. And Green Team and Environmental will be on the 24th. Having a heck of a night.
Oh my God, we have to go to executive session and I don't know how we're going to do it. Okay, just really briefly, there's a lot of graduations. In fact, I missed my kids graduating from Red Bank Middle School today. They moved it inside and then there was a room. So, and I also missed a very special day for Councilman Pujols. Would you like to give them your news?
Yeah, sure. I recently got sworn in today as a battalion chief in North Hudson Region of Fire and Rescue. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I hope everybody enjoyed Father's Day, even though the weather wasn't the best. And then Saturday, Council President Dougherty made me look okay as I threw out the first pitch of the Sandy Hook Little League All-Star Game.
It was a low strike, but it was a strike.
And I just want to reiterate, also on the borough website, it will not be up until, not today, maybe tomorrow. There'll be a sign up if you would like to volunteer at the fair. That'll be another way for you to indicate your interest, and we'll help facilitate that. So now that we are done with all of that, and I'm sure that there's somebody out there that would like to give more public comment. The floor is yours. The floor is available for those online. Are there any hands? Mr. Edelman, please come forward.
Mike Edelman, Santa Ocean Boulevard. I just wanted to commend the board, Mayor, both the Red Level Board and the Council for its continued commitment to rent control ordinance that was passed. And I would have been remiss not to say something. So thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Langstrom.
Josh Limestone at 60 Bayside Drive. This is the real reason I came tonight. I don't know if you're aware, but have you looked at the election results?
I have.
On the county website?
I have.
Have you noticed that the turnout in Monmouth County was 10% higher than anywhere else in the state of New Jersey?
Well, then those knocking on doors are doing a good job.
No. The number of registered voters posted excludes all the unaffiliateds. The books are being cooked, and I think someone should do something about that.
Mayor Giuliani.
How many registered voters are there in the Atlantic Highlands? You must know.
It's, you just gave me the exact number, so I could look up the email you sent me.
Yeah. But that's not what it says on the website. It's 2,300 on the website. So the percentage turnout is much higher. Just parenthetically, because I was doing, I found that Agnes Brogan, 9 Columbia Avenue, who registered to vote in 1950, was still on the voting rolls when she died in 2003. Okay, so I don't know who's doing what, but it is the responsibility of the voters to inform the previous Board of Elections that they've moved, which, you know, if you've ever moved, that is not a high priority in anybody's move. So there are a lot of people. There are about 243 in the Atlantic Islands who are on the rolls, but are not really voters. And they wouldn't be allowed to vote without proving that they were still in town. But my point is that leaving out people who were eligible to vote in the primary, which is the unaffiliated, they would have had to declare for a party, but they were eligible to vote, not including them in the numbers of registered voters, really is illegal, okay? And you're an official body, so I'm asking you to do something officially to about this.
We will consider it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Start walking. And yeah, like pause on the some yeah, there the hand raise. Yeah. We'll do it after Mr. Yeah. Fisher.
Mark Fisher, 911 Third Avenue. One thing that Councilman Carl Cerno forgot to mention is our big, beautiful new fire engine is going to have a wet down as well as a new ambulance as well.
That's correct.
Wednesday night at the fair?
Yes.
Yep.
So I know that a lot of local fire companies are going to come visit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a little bit of extra noise that Wednesday. The EV charger project.
Yes, sir.
Have we narrowed down how much grant money we're going to get for that yet?
So our JCP&L EV driven grant application is being reviewed at the moment. So we're waiting on those figures. We heard from DEP today that our request is being processed for reimbursements. That $24,000 should be in our coffers hopefully very soon. And again, the federal incentive is a gigantic question mark, but we can't apply for that until after the end of the calendar year.
So of the total, how much money are we actually going to get?
It's a good question.
But what's committed?
What do you mean what's committed?
We know we have two things that are committed.
Yes.
And the third, the federal government, is unclear. So
if everything comes through, our total out-of-pocket spend is about $36,000. That's off the top of my head. I have these figures in my computer, but I haven't prepared for this evening. But again,
federal grant the biggest one?
No.
Which one is the biggest one?
The JCP&L, EV-driven. Yep.
All right. I brought up at the last meeting about the increase in JCP&L rates, and now that we supply customers with electric, it's going to cost the borough more.
Right.
You know how much we're going to be charged now?
I have not seen, and I can get that information for you. As I mentioned last time, I don't believe we've even received our first invoice from JCP&L for these chargers yet. So we can look at all that data. I've also sent an inquiry to our contact at Bryan Electric to find out what other municipalities and institutions are doing for this, just so we're in line with other bodies, and we'll make those decisions soon.
Yeah. I mean, just to be fair, right? Compare this to the harbor with gasoline prices.
Sure.
When a truck comes and dumps gas and it's 15 cents higher or lower than last time, they make that adjustment like right away.
Right.
We should be doing the same with EV chargers. Any update on regionalization, the mayor's meetings?
No, there hasn't been a meeting. We've
Sure, you met a couple.
Yeah, we've met a couple times. There hasn't been a recent meeting, I think. I'm sure that summer is going to keep us all busy, but nothing, there's been nothing to act on, at least.
Okay. And the, going back to the Brant Point 15-mile-per-hour speed signs, it's not in the ordinance. So if somebody sped 25 miles an hour through the cul-de-sac at Brant Point, there's no way to enforce that speed limit. The town speed limit is 25. It doesn't matter what those signs say. So
can we enforce it at Edwards Way?
What's that?
We can enforce it at Edwards Way, but we wouldn't be able to enforce it there.
Where's Edwards Way?
It's your favorite 10-mile-per-hour section of the harbor.
Oh, well, that's in the ordinance.
Oh, it's in the ordinance. Oh, you're saying that this, because this is not, so we'll have to look and see if we need to update the ordinance enumerate it.
It seems like the developer, I don't remember that being discussed, but it seems like the developer has that.
What do you want the speed limit to be?
It should be 25, like the rest of the town. Every street is 25 miles per hour. Every street, except for the harbor and Route 36.
Thank you for the recommendation.
Thank you. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
We have Jonathan Smith.
Hi, Jonathan Smith.
Come over here right now. He's in there.
You there?
He should be.
Mr. Smith?
He is muted.
Unmute, Mr. Smith.
Sorry, it takes a minute to zoom up the phone. I apologize. Thank you for the evening. John Smythe, 251 Ocean Boulevard. I was just giving a call in just to see if we got an update from Easy Docs on the silt fence.
We did. The engineer. Yeah, we'll have an update at the next meeting, but we did have a, the question was raised on your behalf in a meeting that Mr. Farajean and I had with CME, and there was, we'll have an answer for you at the next meeting, but it was positive. And then you see that we did apply again for a grant for improvements to the same grant that came away.
That we didn't get.
Yeah, well, we got it, but they didn't appropriate it because they haven't appropriated anything.
Yeah, completely. Does that grant work where it's part of a bill that will go to Washington, and then dependent on the further approval of the bill, that will determine whether the state receives the grant money or not?
It's directly to the municipality, so yes.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Have a good night.
You as well.
Anybody else? Okay. We do have to go into executive session.
I'd like to make a motion to close public comment.
We didn't even move to open it.
Close it anyway.
So we're going to have a, like, 8-minute executive session. Topic is negotiations, and we will not be taking any formal action. This is just an update to council on the current state of our labor negotiations. And those are ongoing, and we were going to go into that room, and just because we're going to be able to go home.
Go home?
Yeah, just leave the meeting on.
Okay, do you want me to mute until you guys come back?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then just, I don't know if you know, but as long as the meeting...
Oh, God. Yep. Oh, yeah, wait. Jesus.
No, it's from a poly.
We've gotten spoiled with our short meetings.
Can I get a motion and a second to adjourn? Vito, you have the luxury.
You're supposed to actually say we came back to executive session and we have nothing to report.
Nothing to report. No action taken.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Second? All in favor?
Aye. Oh,
thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Grant.